It's 8:30 on June 9th, 2023. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. Ms. Pakenham, would you please call roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davy? Dr. Davy?
Here.
Thank you. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Ms. Denton? Absent. And Dr. Rates?
Present.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have a quorum.
All right, thank you very much. And welcome everybody to this meeting. Board staff, thank you for compiling the volumes of work paperwork that were needed for the review for the committee members, and likewise the committee members for reviewing those and being able to have a discussion about this. And Ms. Galvin, appreciate you being here as well for your ongoing counsel. Much appreciated. So, and obviously much needed. So, moving on from that, next point regarding the continuing ed credits, the Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE provider, continuing education provider, excuse me. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification, Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meetings page for this particular meeting. Let's move on to the next item number four. Regarding that, Ms. Den was recused from all cases on this agenda. Dr. Davis Wilson, would you please provide this time a status update?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have taken the time to review the request for my recusal. I wanted to make just a couple of notes. The first one being that there was a statement that I maybe did not clearly say at the last meeting, but that was interpreted to be that I had said I had made. I adjudicated multiple matters involving the children involved on one of these cases. That is not accurate. My statement of adjudicating multiple matters was related to the licensees, in that I have been, you know, on this board and have actively participated in, with no bias, multiple reviews of licensures, licensure renewals, all related to the licensees and/or the licensees' business. I have also adjudicated or helped adjudicate and participate in other complaints and complaint resolutions, and that this was all done without bias. Having said that, I have reviewed considerations around my specific role as a director of an organization in my past, and I do not believe that at this time any participation that I have would be coming from any place of bias. I think that prior to 2019, the complexity of services in Arizona resulted in quite a bit of confusion and conversations and need for meetings. And I don't think that that's a reflection of anybody, or, you know, anybody in a manner that would lead me to have any further reasons to exhibit any bias. And again, I feel that as I have done since 2017, I would be able to continue to see these cases without any bias. Now, having said that, I do also believe in the process, and I do believe in the opportunity for licensees to express, you know, their concerns or to have a difference of those opinions. And I do trust that you know, these processes are in place for a reason. And as a result, I am going to go ahead and honor that request, and I will be recusing from the remainder of the items on this agenda.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, so agenda item 4 is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or is subject of a complaint and is present today make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after the statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, we'll make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after a second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based on the parties present and request to speak. Committee members, by way of reminder, the case reviews on today's agenda are not evidentiary hearings. The committee's legal purpose is to recommend to the board of psychologist examiners possible findings of fact, potential conclusions of law, and suggest the board consider taking certain actions. In order to accomplish our work today, please be succinct during the case discussion and deliberation. All right, so let's take a look at agenda item number 4A, complaint number 23-02 with Dylan Huff. Dr. Davey, you're assigned as lead on this, so would you please provide an overview of the case?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will do my best to follow your instructions around the succinctness.
Thank you, Dr. Davey.
That said, this case is comes to us with from a complaint filed by an agency as well as a licensed behavior analyst. This is way of background. Mr. Huff, our licensee, has been a behavior analyst since 2017 here in the state of Arizona. He is part owner of an agency referred to as Adventure ABA. He is, as I understand through reading the documentations, is exiting the business, but is currently supervising 4 cases on a temporary basis to be able to assist his former agency. The complainant, Deanne, in this case, is part of Blue Cross Blue Shield. And through reading through the documentation, you will see that there was an initiated inquiry with regard to some services billed to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, signed off by Mr. Huff and the agency. Blue Cross Blue Shield then began a review of that information, Mr. Huff responding to requests there with regard to what the nature of those services were. Give me 1 second. I'm going to toggle down to my notes on that just as a brief oversight here. Boom, boom, boom. There we are. And that review, I think it's important that we kind of have a brief overview of what that looked like. There was some potential concerns that came out of some clinical records that were part of submissions to the funder, in this case, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And as such, that they began to kind of dig into whether or not there were concerns around the quality of care. So the review kind of went through the process that I think many of you on the board are familiar with, requests for records, for further correspondences back and forth about what was included in those records, discussions around the clinical care that was provided, the level of service, the level of supervision, the types of goals that were being worked on, where those goals were being worked on, who was overseeing protocol modifications, and so on. And so in the cases that were reviewed, above seven total by Blue Cross Blue Shield, they identified that there were quality of care concerns for the members that they had been reviewed, and moved further to be able to file this complaint. The areas that are of concern with regard to this is, you know, there's multiple potential codes and ethic violations that are mentioned. But in reviewing it, you know, ones that really stuck out to me were around adequacy around records, and then issues around multiple relationships. That's my summary at this time, Mr. Chair, and happy to answer any questions from the committee members.
All right, thank you, Dr. Dillon. Are there any questions for Dr. this time? Okay. I know that the complainant DN is present. If so, would you please unmute yourself, state your initials for the record, and this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have follow-up questions for you as well.
Yes, good morning. My name is SZ, and I'm a clinician, and I represent the payer. My statement here might be just marginally longer than 5 minutes. My intent is really to not summarize the details of the concerns, since since our summary from August and all the supporting documentation has been submitted. But my intent really is to provide the board with some context for these concerns and things that may not be apparent to you from just the flow of the records. So we know that the field of ABA, relatively speaking, is a young and evolving field, and that the standards of care and excellence are still being defined by you in many ways as the experts in the field. We are a health plan amidst this growing field, and we want to understand the standards that we can expect from a wide range of providers that are practicing in the field. I can boil down the functions of the health plan into two brief statements, which is that we're responsible for ensuring that the standards of evidence-based care are delivered by the providers in our network, and that our member experience is as good as it can be. And we're responsible to pay for medically necessary care that meets those standards. As part of our due diligence, we review cases, and over the last nearly 2 years, we really have, through a review of many, many, hundreds of cases really, come to understand the care that's delivered by ABA professionals throughout Arizona. And we have come to understand this particular provider as an outlier in that regard, which is part of what precipitates this request for your review. A couple of examples within sort of how is he an outlier. So we've had a number of collaborative conversations with providers in the field who have children on the spectrum. And sometimes they prefer to seek care within the agencies that they're familiar with, in which they're employed. We've had those conversations with providers collaboratively. Several providers have been extremely thoughtful about the boundaries and safety nets that need to be put in place to avoid even the perception of dual relationships or conflicts of interest. This provider was an outlier in this regard, which is what raised our concern. The details are in the outline, but we were unable to find any boundaries or safety nets to prevent what we thought were serious conflicts of interest with a high potential for violating of your ethical code. Based on the statements and allegations that are included in the materials you've received, we feel that the care that was delivered to the H siblings was complicated by dual relationships, that the integrity of those records were in question, that there was inappropriate billing, and that there may have been exploitation of human resources because of the hierarchy of power, and that the care as a result was well below standard, unduly influenced by Mr. Huff's position as the boss. These are all the things that ethical codes are intended to avoid and to protect. The second theme is really about collaborative conversations around the provision of services during the COVID-19 pandemic. We know that it was extraordinarily difficult for everyone to ensure that services were delivered. But based on our review of many cases, again, this provider was an outlier with respect to what we consider to be and what you consider to be a minimum standard of supervision for RVTs. And in our written communications with Mr. Huff about this concern, he made us aware that he is an approved supervisor by the board, that there were a number of supervisees delivering care to our members under his supervision. And that is all fine with us. The issue was that we could not obtain the documentation related to that supervision when we requested the records. And this is where things get complicated and where your review of the situation is really appreciated. And I'll just say this because I feel like as a field, you know, there needs to be an understanding about this. But from the payer's point of view, if any part of the service is billed to the payer, it's only reimbursable if the care is supervised by an independently licensed professional, according to the standard that the field sets for supervision. So in our view and in documents provided by CASP and other sources, 1 to 2 hours for every 10 of direct care. Now, these are not written in stone. These are not written on tablets. These are guidelines and standards that the field has set. And so what we look for, if there is care delivered outside of those guidelines, is some rationale or explanation. And for most, if not all, other providers in the network, those rationales are well documented if there is a problem in delivering the supervision that is considered standard. Similarly, with parent caregiver training, where there are barriers to delivering what is the standard of care, particularly for very young children, there were typically statements in the record about the barriers to getting this done, how those barriers would be remediated. This provider was an exception in that regard, in that we feel that the supervision was not well documented, that there were numerous discrepancies in the records where the RVT would say the supervisor was not present, but there would be a note kept in another database that looks like it's a supervision note for that same date of service that says they were there. And so those discrepancies left us with concerns about what is this separate record keeping actually mean? And are we looking at a case that's well supervised or not? These are the same children whose progress was slow, whose goals were not particularly being updated, whose master goals were not being updated, program modifications not being made. And so we could see that the youth receiving the services were not particularly making progress to their potential. And we could only conclude that perhaps the supervision was at the source of that, thus leading to our quality of care type of reviews. Mr. Huff was an outlier in this regard. Normally, we would have a collaborative conversation, but that was difficult to do in this case. And so most of our correspondence was in writing, all of which has been provided at your request. So in summary then, we are very appreciative of your review of the situation, because we as a payer in your community would like to understand what is the standard of care that we can and documentation that we should expect from the providers in Arizona, because in many ways this group sets the standard. And so we appreciate your review and thank you for allowing me to make the statement.
Thank you, Essie. All right. Do DN, I also noted that one of your other colleagues may be on AR. Do either of you two have a statement to make?
No, SC at this time has summarized it quite proficiently, but thank you for your time.
This is DN, and I do not.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Are there any questions for SZ?
Questions. Regard to some of the documentation that was in there around some sanctions that were provided across claims. After the conclusion of your investigation and your attempts to work with the provider and the licensee in this case, I read through what I believe was the completed documentation from you all as the payer. But just in summary, what were the sanctions that ultimately the payer landed on with regard to this?
Dr. Davey, when you say sanctions,
It sounded like there were sanctions around particular claims, or that there may have been, further review of billing practices. Were there dollars that were clawed back? Were there, are you continuing to work with this agency? Are they contracted, credentialed with Blue Cross Blue Shield Arizona? Like, what has kind of come of your investigation in terms of actions as a payer?
Yes, let me attempt to summarize that. So, the process really started in, I would say, early 2021, if not late 2020. So it has been an iterative kind of process, and we have addressed the provider, and a number of the cases were on post-service review, so that services were delivered, but we were requesting records to review the claims prior to payment. Mm-hmm. Many of those claims in those early days were denied as not medically necessary because of the lack of either supervision or parent caregiver training. As we were following the InterQual guideline with those requirements, there are opportunities for appeal for those. I'm not aware that any appeals were filed on those claims. Once we initiated the quality of care corrective action and the prior authorization process, I believe we stopped the post-claims reviews for the cases because they ought to have been coming through on prior authorization. And so many of the cases, and there were a few new cases too, under Mr. Huff's name that were billed under Adventure, we reviewed those cases, and the documents that we requested on prior auth were not included. And so those resulted in the denial of care as well. We have not retroactively clawed back any money, partly because, the volume of claims is fairly small. And the claims that we're talking about in terms of the inappropriate billing that I mentioned, much of it is, kind of more than a year old. And we do have boundaries around what's allowed there. It was more important to us to try to understand, in the evolution of this issue, what was going on and attempt at corrective action. It wasn't as much about the money as it was about trying to understand and correct the issues. And again, this was all happening at the same time as we were understanding, the standards in the community are not this. The standards are much better than this. Mm-hmm. And so it really did take us a while to sort of put it all together. I think one of the main factors, though, is that the individuals that are in care with this provider now, while under the corrective action, are not being approved because the documentation is not being submitted to allow for that. It's got this circular impact that is terrible.
Yep. To that point there of, new documents that are coming forward with either, new authorizations, reauthorizations, those are being scrutinized. But to that point, the agency as well as Mr. Huff are still contracted and credentialed with Blue Cross Blue Shield today.
So let me explain that the providers are individually contracted. Paige Huff's contracting status, I believe, shifted to a contracted provider in around the October, the late fall timeframe of 2022. Mm-hmm. Mr. Huff had been contracted prior to all this. I do believe that his status has been terminated from the network. And then there are other BCBAs within the organization that are newly contracted with the plan. And as far as there are still claims coming through as late as March, as recently as March of 23 under Mr. Huff's name. But when we see the records, we don't really see his name on the treatment plans. We only see his name on the claims. It's confusing who is doing what. That is the other issue that we've been trying to sort through.
I appreciate those answers. Thank you. I have no further questions at this time for SC.
Dr. Rates, any questions for SC or her colleagues? Okay, so Mr. Huff, please unmute yourself and state your full name for the record.
Dylan Huff.
And Ms. Quinn, would you also introduce yourself?
Yes, good morning. Brianna Quinn, representing Dylan Huff.
Okay, thank you. All right, this is the opportunity for you and your attorney to make a brief statement, up to 5 minutes. The committee may have additional questions for you. Mr. Huff, if you would like, or Ms. Quinn, please proceed.
I'll start just with a brief opener. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's good to see you all again this morning. I'll be brief because I'm sure Mr. Huff has a lot to cover with you guys today, but I would like to make a couple points. The first is an update on Mr. Huff's employment status. Obviously, that's been a little fluid as we've been going through these complaints. As of June 30th, at the end of this month, he will no longer be employed in any capacity with Adventure ABA. And he can talk about those specifics if you guys have questions about that. Also in that regard, as we've told the board before, he has not been working in an extended capacity for well over a year, and that includes on Blue Cross Blue Shield files. So that is the explanation of, you know, why his name has not been popping up on files for Adventure ABA in recent time. Another point I would like to make, and that Mr. Huff will go into, is that there's a long professional history between Mr. Huff and Dr. SZ and the other complainants mentioned in your guys' file that he will also explain to you. So I think it's important to have the committee realize the full extent of the relationship and that it's not just, you know, starting from this complaint. And lastly, I would like to note that Mr. Huff is a parent in this regard. And I'm sure you guys, as the professionals in the field, can really be sympathetic to that. Mr. Huff will describe, you know, that he was trying to get services for his children and at a very difficult time. So there are complaints that are listed in the investigative report that some are involving his role as a parent, while others may involve his role as a licensee. However, I would urge the committee to recognize and sympathize about a role as a parent as they would any other parent in those specific regards. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn. Mr. Huff?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'll reiterate kind of what my attorney said. I think the hardest thing for me to be here today is that I am here in two capacities. One as a parent, and one as a clinician. I do have three lovely kids with autism, Serenity, Garrison, and Scarlet Rose, all mentioned in this complaint. And frankly, at the end of the day, they're all absolutely perfect kids. They've made so much progress, you wouldn't even believe. Like I said, our youngest daughter was on an AAC device for 6 months, and frankly now, she talks up a storm. She's the most wonderful little girl. I stay at home with her all day, every day, and I've been grateful for that time. So with that said, though, it is truly unfortunate that I'm here having to defend with my kids. And that was kind of where the relationship with Dr. or with SZ really started to take, you know, kind of a sour toll. She had approached me originally back in December of 2019, like she mentioned, about my kids and their services they were receiving from Nicole Holmes, who at the time was, frankly, one of the very few BCBAs in the state that I had not had some interaction with in the past. Again, that is one of the biggest barriers to having three kids with autism. Even Diana Wilson has pointed out that she had several interactions with my kids throughout their time getting ABA therapy. And again, at one point they were at Hope Group and my son was trying to get services and was denied because of his insurance that we had at the time. A truly unfortunate situation. And one of the reasons why Paige and I actually decided to start our own company, it gave us an opportunity to get our own insurance. It gave us an opportunity to provide those quality services for our kids. Again, open up our financial resources to be able to do that. As soon as we got adequate insurance, we moved our kids over to work under Dr. Jacob Bonet over at Scottsdale Pediatric Behavioral Services. They were there for about 6 to 9 months before we found out that he was actually billing group therapy and telling us that our kids were getting individual one-on-one therapy. He was also billing for nap time, and we had several concerns that I ended up bringing to him as my former colleague and as my former supervisor. And again, he did not address any of these issues. At that time, Paige and I, we ended up contacting Nicole Holmes. She actually reached out to us via an Indeed post that we are looking for a BCBA. At that time, we were actually looking for a BCBA part-time for the company. And she actually, you know, was a perfect fit for our kids. Again, I don't know if any of you guys have worked with Nicole Holmes in the past, but she is quite a character, and her and Serenity got along really well, and we love that. So again, it worked out really well. Here was a BCBA that I had no interaction with, no past history with. Again, even Jacob Bonet, where the kids were at before, was my previous BCBA supervisor, and I worked for him for over a year as an RBT. And so again, we felt as Nikki coming on as an independent contractor, we gave her her own RBTs, we gave her her own billing, we gave her her own everything. My agency just basically processed the records and everything for her. Again, in that capacity with Nicole Holmes as the BCBA, it did allow me to operate strictly as a parent, which was something I had not had the opportunity to do yet. And even though the kids were there at my agency, again, they made more progress with Nicole as the BCBA than they had made at any previous agency. And frankly, I am grateful for her for that. I'm grateful that, again, I can't take that away from my kids at any point in time. Moving on, again, we talked to SZ about some of the things. And again, I provided all this information to her too, trying to explain why the kids were where they were and what the situation was like. Again, the communication really broke down several times. I had requested several times to get a copy of these standards that she was referring to. Again, was never provided with those standards. Eventually, again, we went back and forth and they ended up denying my kids coverage and they had to abruptly stop ABA therapy in January of 2020 or January of 2021. And again, that was really unfortunate for my daughter, Scarlett Rose, of all people. She was still in early intervention and really could have used the help. At that point, again, we were dealing with some personal issues in our lives. And so I actually stepped out of the business at that point to basically take care of Scarlett because she was unable to attend preschool, given her behaviors were still pretty erratic. She had some severe elopement that basically prevented her from participating in any sort of regular preschool. And so I stayed home with her to take care of her and kind of, you know, work with her in that capacity as a stay-at-home dad. At that point, I'd also requested, I tried to get calls about other cases of mine with Blue Cross Blue Shield. The Dr. Zabrowski was also, SZ was also the reviewer on. I had made several just respectful requests to Blue Cross Blue Shield to have somebody else review my cases because I felt that the professional relationship had already deteriorated given that, again, I got to act in, I had some very negative interactions with her on a parent side. And even as we were discussing my clinical cases, there were several times where SZ would make comments, just like we discussed with your kids, Dylan, and I did not appreciate those sorts of unprofessional comments. So I did make several requests to Blue Cross Blue Shield to have her removed, given the professional issues we were having and that dual relationship that had already developed because of me in a parent role. Blue Cross Blue Shield ultimately denied that request. Well, they just basically ignored my request for that situation. And so again, eventually, as we're working through these reviews, AR stepped in as a BCBA, as an actual licensed BCBA working for Blue Cross Blue Shield. Again, I was very relieved to hear that they were making those steps in the right direction to actually have people making clinical decisions who are trained in the field of autism and understand ABA as a whole. And then I was, to my knowledge, again, I actually had one of my cases being reviewed. LM was the client name that AR actually denied outright all of his services. We were doing basically a last 4 months of services for this kiddo so that he could go on to school in August. I pointed out to AR that there is really no reason for us to deny a kid services outright. I mean, again, all of you members of the board, I'm sure understand in some capacity, if we take away kid services abruptly right before they go to school, They're doing a full-time ABA program, and we cut them down to zero over summer. That kid's not going to be ready for school when it comes time to August. At that time, I actually requested to speak to AR's supervisor, who got on the phone with us and is actually a registered nurse, not a BCBA or an LBA in any capacity. At that time, BRN actually overturned AR's decision to deny this kiddo services right there on the phone, based on the information I was able to provide. Again, when I raised these concerns to Blue Cross Blue Shield about some of the ethical decisions that they were making, outright denying a kid services, and then an RN coming in and overturning those decisions, again, my efforts were ignored. At that point, I actually had made a comment to several members at Blue Cross Blue Shield that I may need to pursue your help at the board if this was going to continue to happen. And then I ended up with a complaint from Blue Cross Blue Shield in my lap shortly after that. So again, I mean, as far as everything goes, I know that there are some issues with the supervision. We do have a full team of BCBAs and supervisees that work for us or worked for us at Adventure ABA. As my attorney mentioned, I am no longer really in any working capacity. I actually currently have no clients. I am just strictly helping Paige currently transition myself out of the business. But we always make sure that we're providing at least 5% supervision to all of the RBTs for the BACB guidelines. Each of the cases, generally, it's about that same 5 to 10%, whether that be from a licensed behavior analyst or one of our, again, supervisees, one of our BCBAs in training. And so, again, we made sure that those things were always being met. And again, to say that our clients weren't making progress is just an outright lie. I mean, we have now graduated all of those clients that were under review, except for my kids, who, again, had those services abruptly taken from them, wrongfully so, in my opinion. But again, we have actually graduated all of those clients. We've had nothing but, you know, positive reviews from the parents of all those clients. And again, I would really, really urge the board to keep that in mind as we continue to move forward.
Thank you, next. Mr. Huff.
Thank you.
Do any members have questions for Mr. Huff?
I'll go ahead and begin, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Davey.
So I think a couple of questions with regard to the RBTs in question, Mr. Huff. I think there are about 10 of them that you provided us documentation on. For those 10, during the time when they were working specifically with your three children, who on the registry for the BACB would have been listed as their supervisors?
Nicole Holmes.
And then for Nicole Holmes, so she was listed as our supervisor. You guys had processed them through Adventure for their onboarding as employees to kind of take them through, like, talk me through the rationale that you had of bringing them through that system versus keeping them out kind of the Adventure ABA circle. Why did you just have to bring them in?
So basically, that was kind of, again, something we'd worked out with Nicole Holmes in the beginning. She really didn't want to have to deal with the nitty gritty of that, but she was really interested in starting her own practice at some day. And so we had, I mean, again, this, we had built, you know, a pretty good therapeutic relationship with Nikki. She kind of advocated for what she needed for her team. But we did bring the RBTs. We'd hired them obviously as BTs. They would go through Adventure ABA's training program, which again, I am not personally involved in, nor is Paige. We have a whole separate training department. Again, and then their payroll was basically processed through our system for the advantages of Nikki. Nicole Holmes, she really provided those services to our kids. She got her own team. Again, if for whatever reason, I think there was one time when we had to make a change in behavior technician strictly because one of them got pregnant or something. But again, really, we had done our best to make sure that there was no cross overlap in between the RBTs that were coming, who were working under me, and the RBTs who were working under Nikki. We made sure that, again, she had her own team. She had her own system. Again, we all use Catalyst, which I know everybody's pretty familiar with, in Central Reach, and eventually AccuPoint. And Nikki did all of those things. She uploaded all of her own notes. She followed up with all of her team members. Basically, the day that those RBTs graduated from training, they were Nikki's responsibility, and we were basically just there to help facilitate. And when I say we, I mean my staff, not me and Paige personally.
So is it fair to say that Ms. Holmes and the RBTs, they were afforded access and leveraged all of the systems that were essentially tied to Adventure ABA?
Yep.
So that would include your HR, you know, your human resources information system, your EHR system, any charting data collection systems. I'm trying to think of what types of systems. Were they on Adventure ABA's liability insurance, or was that liability insurance carried by Ms. Holmes?
Nicole Holmes carried her own liability insurance. But again, as far as the medical records and things went, like I said, those were all processed through our billing system. Again, we have our own independent billing department. But again, Nikki was responsible for uploading, processing all of those, reviewing her RBT's notes. Again, she really did operate her own practice with three clients, and my staff just kind of processed the records, sent them off to the insurance company, and processed the payroll for everybody. But again, I really do want to emphasize Nicole Holmes was an independent contractor. We even paid her through her own business. I provided that information to the board. She had her own LLC set up. Literally everything that she did was at her own will. And Paige and I were strictly parents in a capacity with Nicole Holmes.
So I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. Like I understand, I saw the 1099. I did not see any sort of contract between you and Ms. Holmes, or you yourself and your spouse, Paige or myself, between them. So what I'm hearing are two things. One, I'm hearing that essentially Adventure ABA served as her back office. Is that a fair statement?
That would be a fair statement. Yes.
Is there a written agreement around the boundaries of what that back office could or could not do, and then the expectations on her in terms of being an independent contractor for you all?
Again, we really didn't seem to run into any issues. A lot of it was learning as we go. I mean, again, I think everybody's even pointed out back then, 2019, the ABA was a little different even than it was now. And so we really did try to operate as we go. Again, we set up boundaries that we needed to, provided Nicole with the things that she needed. We did have, again, proper patient intake paperwork and everything that Nicole provided herself. So it was all of her own paperwork. Even when we did an initial intake for our kids, Nicole had her own, you know, her own new client documents and everything. We sat down, we did things her way. But yes, Adventure ABA just operated in that back capacity. And again, Nicole Holmes had access to all of those people, so that again, she wasn't even reaching out to me to get access to stuff. She would contact our billing department if she needed things. And again, it was a pretty seamless system. I mean, honestly, my kids got solid services for over 2 years and made tons and tons of progress.
Yeah, I mean, clinical services aside, I think I'm more interested in just kind of understanding this business relationship. So is there a written agreement between you and Ms. Holmes, or between Adventure ABA and Ms. Holmes?
Yeah, she has an employment contract, basically, or contractor contract. But other than that, again, that was really kind of her capacity.
And does that contract, again, I don't have access to that. I don't know if I missed it in the thousands of pages of documents. So it's a fair statement that I could have. But I saw the 1099, but did not see the contract. Does the contract have any, you know, think about like a supervision contract, right? I mean, there are very clear statements as to, you know, what the expectation between these two entities, these two individuals will be. I understand, you know, enough to be dangerous on 1099 rules and contracts, as you can't dictate to them how they do their business, but there can be agreements of, we're going to provide this kind of information to you, or access to our systems here. Does that contract include any of that?
No, I think most of that stuff took place in a more of a verbal discussion of kind of what she needed from us. Again, we really did kind of take a hands-off approach when it came to Nikki. What she needed from us, we were willing to provide. But again, we did have that employment contract. And again, a lot of it was us just being naive young business owners at the time. I'll take some responsibility for that. Again, a lot of it is learning. I was under the impression, similar like you mentioned, she was an independent contractor. You know, I kind of let her run the things that she did. I really didn't have a whole lot of say in how she did things. And I really wanted it that way on purpose, because I didn't want to be a part of it as a clinician. Again, I didn't like that my kids ended up having to get services at my company. It just felt like the only option to keep them making progress.
I do want to explore one of the comments that you made, that, you know, in 2019, 2020, things are still evolving in terms of, you know, kind of making things happen. You know, I forget the exact word you used, but, you know, how to kind of put it all together, and that it was still kind of a newer experience, and with regard to setting up services or how to deliver services. And everyone can appreciate that comment on the delivery of services side. But I do want to ask, you know, kind of a, you know, a pretty pointed question is, you know, that may be true for service delivery models as we were looking at telehealth and looking at ways to maintain public safety, but that is not true with regard to multiple relationships. And so I think I'd like to explore with you just kind of your understanding of what, you know, what are your responsibilities around multiple relationships as they pertain to the ethics code for the BACB, which this this committee and this board has adopted as the ethics code for our licensed behavior analysts.
Yeah, and I will, like I said, I will admit that, again, being a parent of three kids with autism and a clinician, again, I started in the field back in 2014 as an RBT. I was actually one of the very first RBTs to carry that RBT credential here in the state of Arizona. I was working at CARD at the time. And again, so I've been around for quite some time, too. Even Dr. Davey, I remember I did an interview with you years ago because I was thinking about taking a job at one of the agencies you were working at, I think Touchstone at the time. Again, I've come across almost every single BCBA at that time. Again, my license number is 267. I think we're way up in the thousands at this point. Again, so there really was not a lot of availability of providers, which made it difficult. Again, even when Serenity was originally diagnosed, she got services at CARD while I was working there at CARD. Again, so it seemed, you know, and it's not the first time that I've seen it happen. In fact, we actually had an investigation done previously by Blue Cross Blue Shield back in 2019. We worked with Scott Lusher, something that Blue Cross Blue Shield has neglected to provide you guys any information on. But he was the investigator at Blue Cross Blue Shield at the time. And he actually came down to my office, met my kids, discussed with us kind of what the situation was. You know, and he basically sent us the all clear that we were good to go because of the limited availability of providers. There's actually state laws in Arizona allowing basically individuals with kids or individuals with family members that need services to get those services through themselves if there is a lack of availability of providers. And again, I will reiterate that I personally had less of a relationship with Nicole Holmes than I had with any of the previous BCBAs any of my kids had had. In that sense, I really had you know, I really had, that was like, that was the best option we had. I had, again, I've worked with so many BCBAs over the years in an RBT capacity, in a supervision capacity. There was just a mutual relationship for Nicole Holmes to take over kind of those kids' cases because we had no previous interactions with her, Paige or myself. And Paige and I, we worked at different agencies too. So you're complicating things even more when it comes to dual relationships. You're talking about two clinicians with three kids who have both worked in the field. Paige started in the field in 2015. And so, again, the network of people we've worked with is so large that it's hard to say where the gray area of dual relationship starts because we all know each other. And we were on wait lists for years trying to get our kids in services in other places. And that's, again, that was really kind of the situation at hand. It wasn't a choice that we wanted to make, but it was a choice that was necessary for the success of my children.
Yes, I appreciate those comments. I think my response to that would be that, yes, many of us have crossed paths over many years. We have a recusal from a board member today at your request because of those interactions. But I think it's incumbent upon us as individuals that have been in Arizona for a significant period of time and have had those interactions that we understand those multiple relationships and that, you know, we determine that they're either is a multiple, you know, there's a risk of that occurring or that there is one occurring, you know, that we're pretty clearly, you know, charged with our, you know, with having documented our efforts to maintain safeguards for not only ourselves, but in this case, it'd be yourself, your children, the independent contractors, the RBTs in place. And I, you know, in the documentation, I don't really see that effort. I see, you know, verbal discussion around it now, and I appreciate your thoughts around it. But in terms of the setup of this, knowing, you know, what you just explained, knowing that as you walked in, the things that you had already been working through the system with in terms of getting your children set up in services, knowing the fact that you were known in the community, knowing that that could, you know, positively or negatively impact relationships, knowing that you were a clinician, knowing that your wife was a clinician, that all of those things would play into at some point you know, a multiple relationship or some sort of conflict of interest where I don't agree with this school. Well, are you not agreeing with me as dad? Or are you not agreeing with me as someone who's got a master's degree and a BCB and a licensed behavior analyst, right? How do you, you know, what's the conflict resolution there for some sort of disagreement between you and Ms. Holmes or one of the RBTs? And I think that that's, you know, one of the largest missteps I'm seeing in this case is that that failure to document the things that you likely knew, that you knew were out there and did not necessarily, you know, think it was at that time take the opportunity to memorialize some of the efforts that maybe you were making or your wife was making around protecting all the parties involved. Quite honestly, it could have go multiple different ways from the way I read this case of who could be discussing what at this point in terms of multiple relationships. I guess, you know, another question I have is just, I have some questions about the RBTs, but I also want to give my fellow committee members a chance to ask some questions. One question I have for you, I thank you for the employment clarification. And in my summary, I know that you had temporarily taken over some things to be able to help with continuity of care. And what is your plan post exit of Adventure ABA? Are you going to maintain your licensure here in the state of Arizona? Are you going to maintain your national certification? Have you identified what your plan is?
I mean, in short, I've got a 6-month non-compete that starts the day I depart from Adventure ABA, so June 30th. So I won't even be legally eligible to practice until January 1st of 2024. At that time, I frankly don't know what I want to do. Like I said, dealing with this situation in and of itself, having to balance the roles of being dad, being a clinician. Again, I have to really take a hard look at my life and what's really worth it. I cannot give up the time that I've gotten with my kids, having this time off. And frankly, the field of ABA is taking a lot away from that for me. I spend a lot of time arguing with insurance companies, fighting for kids' services. You know, I come home at the end of the day and I don't want to be dad because I spent all day being dad for everybody else. So frankly, when that time's up, I really don't know what I plan on doing.
I appreciate the answer and understand the need for reflection. I'll pause there, but I would like to reserve the right to come back and ask further questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Dr. Reitz, do you have any questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mr. Huff, I had a couple of questions regarding the documentation. Some of those issues were pointed out by SZ. One of those is the separation between the session notes and the supervision notes. Could you describe the way the documentation was kept within your agency regarding that? And if they were in fact separated and it appears that they're difficult to find or match up, could you have a discussion about that with me?
Yeah. So I think some of the issues that SZ has pointed out here again is they are deflecting the fact that we did submit a lot of these session notes that were available for from our assistant supervisors, for lack of a better word. That's the job title we give them. But again, they are people in actively seeking licensure. Either they are post BCBA or they are currently working on their supervision for their BCBA or to sit for their BCBA exam, and they're working on their master's degrees or they've already completed their master's degrees. Unfortunately, we now have and I can't speak to the current moment. At my departure, when I was still working in the business, we had made some changes to allow for those session notes to be put into Catalyst, just like a BCBA session note. Originally, we were keeping them just via email people, and we had discussed this in the previous board meeting, how we were doing things with some of my supervisees, where they were basically sending me emails to review at the time of their session notes. But we also were very strict with the RBTs that they could not check that box that said BCBA present when it wasn't a BCBA present. If it was an assistant supervisor present, obviously that is not a BCBA present. And we don't bill those services. We don't bill any of the assistant supervisor services. We eat that cost as a business. And so we did maintain all those documents and we did submit all those session notes to Blue Cross Blue Shield. And again, they are just disjointed because it's not a perfect system. And they also don't have a way for us to properly submit those notes from non-licensed providers who are non-billable providers, essentially. And so that's really where, you know, they say that it's and it's confusing. Well, it's disjointed because, again, there's not a solid system to document those things. And we've done our best to work with Catalyst to have new session notes put in where the assistant supervisors can go in, and those things are now all kept in the same record. However, now our billing team goes through and, you know, we make sure that those things don't get sent off to insurance because they're non-billable terms. So again, that really, we've made those adjustments to make sure that the continuity of those session notes is a little clearer. But again, even to say, I think that SZ has not pointed out enough of the situation, again, claiming that that RVTs are putting that supervisors aren't present. There's not enough information of which supervisor it was, because again, my supervisees need to get their hours too. And so we were doing the best we could with what we had at the time. And then, like I said, we've progressed. We've made new ways to document those things, to provide those things better. Again, I haven't worked on any Blue Cross Blue Shield cases in over a year. I think I removed myself from all those cases back in March of 2022 last year. And so, again, I really can't speak to what's been going on since then. But I know that those were some adjustments we made to try and make those things clearer for the insurance companies and for the payers. But even when, again, we requested help from the payers, Blue Cross Blue Shield was less than helpful. And even us trying to be able to make, you know, make something work for them too.
They're noting whether a supervisor was present in the session notes, but where was the information or the feedback or the information or documentation that a supervisor was present and recommendations based on that supervision provided at least at the time that you were still engaged with that part of the business?
I think I understand what you're asking. So so we did have separate session notes for those 97153, that direct therapy. Every RBT, again, I'm sure members of the board, you guys understand this process. Every RBT submits that session note at the end of their session. We as supervisors continue to try and do our best to make sure those session notes are up to the highest standards. But again, we are dealing with generally entry-level employees, and it does take some time for us to really get those session notes to be perfect. It is one of the biggest issues we have with documentation, again, is really getting, I mean, we do so many session note audits and we send back so much feedback to RBTs to try and get those up to the highest quality standard, but it does take some time for sure. But then for the 97155 codes, we have separate notes that are still being submitted by the BCBA under that treatment modification, making those adjustments. And so those are also being submitted to the insurance company, being submitted through Catalyst. So let's say I'm supervising you, you're the direct therapist, you're doing your own note, I'm doing my own treatment modification note, your note is reflecting what your direct therapy session looked like. And again, there's a little box that says, you know, supervisor present. And again, honestly, we do session note audits, and I would say 75% of the time, even if I was present, the RBTs forget to check that box. So again, that is something that we just run into at a very high rate, and we continue to work on with them. But then I would submit my own treatment modification note showing the adjustments I made based on that supervision session, based on the data analysis I did from within that session time. And so we would have two separate notes. Again, when it's a non-licensed professional, if they were making adjustments in the book, they actually, depending on where they're at in their supervision, depends on how much freedom we obviously give them to do those things. But generally, again, they would make up recommendations of what they thought they should be doing or what they should do next. And they would send those off to us for review, and it would be in the same format as a 97155 treatment modification session note. Again, one of the BCBAs at the company would review it, depending on whose case it was. Again, we would provide feedback to the assistant supervisor. The assistant supervisor would go in and make those adjustments if they needed to in the book, if they got approval, or again, we would have a discussion with them kind of how to improve those session notes or improve their overall supervision session. But again, up until I think the beginning of 2022, those things were all just kept via email as more of a training tool for the assistant supervisors.
And SC pointed out, and maybe you can help me understand this part of it, is that it didn't appear that those notes, the session notes from, for example, 97115, were kept in the same set with the client's notes. Why was there a separation of those? And then were those notes available to be provided to Blue Cross Blue Shield for their review to ensure that supervision was in fact happening, that there was documentation that was other than an email between a supervisor and their RBT?
Yep. And so we, again, I would need SE to further comment on what exactly they found, because we did provide them with all of the supervision notes as well as all the direct therapy notes. All of those notes are kept in each client's folder within Catalyst. There is no separate folder, except for the assistant supervisors, like I said, at which point we have corrected that to try and put that into Catalyst. But we had to work with Catalyst to have them literally engineer us a new option within the database, something that, again, no other provider has, because we had to ask Catalyst to do it for us. So again, at what point are we even, again, I don't know how other agencies are doing it nowadays to document that assistant supervisor, those BCBA supervisee time. However, any billable session notes, like I said, anything from myself with my clients, anything from the direct therapist that had to do with a particular client, they all went into the same file. And frankly, with regards to record keeping, Blue Cross Blue Shield, we've sent thousands and thousands and thousands of record, my billing department, myself. And I don't know how many times we've received back the response, we lost it, we don't have it. Again, at one point I met with the HIPAA compliance officer at my agency to see if there was something we should even be considering as far as a formal complaint against Blue Cross Blue Shield from a HIPAA standpoint, because of the amount of medical records they have lost or they never received. Again, it was really, truly concerning at one point as we were going through this audit. My director of billing literally spent countless hours just resending stuff and resending stuff and resending stuff. Blue Cross Blue Shield launched this audit when they clearly were not ready to launch such an audit. They did not have the staff. They didn't have the means. They weren't ready. And again, there was a lot of missteps that took place on an agency standpoint from Blue Cross Blue Shield. And again, I would really encourage the board to hopefully take a deeper look at some of that stuff too in the future.
Yes, sir. Dr. Davey?
Mr. Chair, I apologize for interrupting. I just want to give the first code word for continuing education credit. We're at the hour mark. For those in attendance, the first code word is Flag Day. Again, that is Flag Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Dr. Davey?
Yes, thank you. Something you said, I just want to connect this dot for me, right? So you've got Catalyst, where you are collecting your session notes, your SOAP notes. You've got a tech in there who's, you know, recording that the session has occurred. You've got the SOAP note essentially tied in there. And that is all essentially, like, I've looked at the documentation. Once that note's kind of converted, then it's signed off by supervisor at some particular point in time. That's one side of the house. Then you're discussing the need to take the information from the individuals that were acted under the direct supervision of the BCBA that were not going to be billed, and putting that documentation into just a Google Doc or a Word document. Explain to me again why the rationale behind not just having that inside of the EHR system as a non-billable event, or as a, you know, a non-billable note. Why separate it?
It's no longer separated. I think I really want to put emphasis on that. Again, we had to work with our billing software. You know, I think we were using AccuPoint, Central Reach. We've used both of the time. Again, there's not necessarily like an easy way for us to understand all that. Again, our billing team had to work with those software companies to get the information we needed to start documenting them in this way. And like I said, Catalyst has now helped us develop a SOAP note, for lack of a better term, for our assistant supervisors that does just go in a non-billable section. And so we were able to do that now. But again, we did have to work with the agencies, with the software companies to help us get that set up properly. And like I said, that's what we were doing. It wasn't ever an intention to keep things separate. We were just limited with what we had in our hands with the software. And as soon as the software companies were able to provide us with a solution, we switched right over to that. And we're keeping that in all the same places intentionally, because we did want to keep things cohesive as well.
Yeah, obviously, I'm not an expert on all billing systems, but, you know, the non-billable notes, for as long as I've been using an electronic medical record, has always been an option to be able to capture something, you know, a phone call, check in with a parent at the door, any of those things, to be able to capture that and turn that into a non-billable. So I'm not fully understanding how your EHR system would not be allowed to kind of capture something that simple and not turn it into a billable event.
And again, it's just going to work with the way that our company was operating at the time. Again, we keep everything in that session notes section of Catalyst. Again, which originally we did not have an option for a non-billable piece in there. Again, we were trying to keep things simple. We didn't want to complicate things by having people go in and put non-billable notes in. Again, we were doing our best to document things from an education standpoint for the supervision piece, as well as a clinical piece. We need to keep those both because those are two separate things. The BACB really does want to know that these assistant supervisors are getting quality supervision and quality training as well. So we did need to keep those things. Again, as soon as we figured out as an agency a cohesive way to keep all those notes in one place, that's what we did.
In terms of, I think I'll pause there for a second. And then I'd like to pivot a little bit now to the RBTs again, and thinking about, there's some discussion in the complaint about obviously RBTs traveling with you and your wife at the time and the kids. Explain to me, the context of that. Give me the other part of it, right? Like I can read it that they are there. I can read it that they're running sessions. I can read the SOAP notes that they're, looking to work on particular skills or reinforcing appropriate behaviors. Tell me how, something like that comes about and what the process was to set up services while traveling.
Yep. So again, I have to take you guys to the parent side of it for me first. It's the part that I think I really need to speak to the board. Again, I know that it's just a unique perspective that I carry, especially with three kids and two clinicians as parents. Paige and I really had never had an opportunity to take a genuine family vacation, right? We got three kids with autism. It just never worked. We really struggled to be able to do normal family things with our kids. Because there's two of us, there's three of them. Even when it was just two of us and two of them, it's two kids with special needs. It makes it really difficult for us to want to go out. You guys have all worked with parents where they've told you the same story. They don't travel. They don't go out to restaurants. They don't do things that normal families get to do. And I think that opportunity posed itself for us to be able to really have a genuine family experience, something that we had never gotten, something that we really wanted with our kids. We have kids as parents to watch them grow up, to experience those things with them, to teach them right from wrong, to have them go out and experience the world. I was really frustrated to see that Nicole Holmes also had basically just committed slander and had lied in her report to Blue Cross Blue Shield that she was unaware we were going to Mexico with the staff. I can provide, if I haven't already, text message documentation of her acknowledging that we were going. She even, and I quote, said, "That sounds so good for you guys. I'm so proud of you for doing it. You guys deserve a vacation. Let me know how I can help and support." So again, for her to say that she didn't know is really kind of a vast, it's just a lie. And so we had discussed with Nicole kind of what we wanted to do. The RBTs had their own set schedule. They worked, basically their set times. When they were off work, they basically just went and hung out on the beach, did whatever. We had set it up where they had their own hotel rooms. They had their own places to go. They were there to help us strictly get through breakfast. I mean, they were there to let us be able to, I remember I had one of the fondest memories taking Serenity out in the ocean and just playing with her in the ocean, which something I would have never gotten to do if I didn't have the support there, because I would have had to been there to help try and support the other two kids. There is no one-on-one time with our kids if we don't have support. It just gets too difficult. And again, I think that's something that it's an experience that only I can speak to, because it's something that only I'm the only one that's gone through it. And so again, we gave them their schedule. The RBTs, they would usually meet us, whichever one was working that day at that time would usually meet us down at the breakfast restaurant. Break up a fight or two over who got to sit in which chair, break up a fight or two over who got to use the portable charger for the iPad. Again, really work on just our regular community outing session. I think it really is important to note that this is a behavior that's been modeled for me as well as a clinician. Even my former mentor, Jessica Belokas, supervised a case when I was an RBT, JB, back at CARD. And that family took a RBT with them to Canada for a week every year, like clockwork. That family was also approved to take an RBT around the world with them on a 9-month world trip. And it was for the same purposes. The family felt like they couldn't go and enjoy this experience if they didn't have some sort of support. And this is from my former mentor that I saw this being modeled. And so it's really hard to say which one's right when, again, it was there. It was clinically appropriate. My kids made progress. Even I've got text messages again from Nicole Holmes literally stating, oh my God, I cannot believe how much Scarlett's talking after you guys got back from that trip. And Paige and I both were, you know, stating back and forth, I know it's crazy. She just got to talk about so many things. We put so many new things in her iPad while we were gone. You know, we were getting her to request to go to the beach on her AAC device. It was super cool. She was requesting from the therapist to toss her in the pool. Again, it was genuinely one of the best family experiences we ever had. And we did our best to make sure that everything was, like I said, was black and white. The RBTs had a schedule. They knew what their expectations were. They had their own hotel rooms. And again, they had constant contact with Nicole Holmes if they needed it. We literally made sure that their iPads were functioning with internet. And again, they did supervision with Nikki while we were even out there. Each of the RBTs met with her once for an hour or two, I believe, to just check in, see how things were going. And again, there was no objections at that time. And again, a lot of just praise for how well the kids were doing with the support.
So let's go back and look. So I appreciate all the context, and let's go back and take a look at that. Right. So I think this is a family vacation, right? I mean, this is you guys getting a chance to do the things that many of us take for granted. You're bringing support down there to make this work. So my questions will center around kind of the setup around this, right? So you've got, you know, a set number of expenses as any of us would encounter. So if I want to take my two kids out on vacation, I'm buying, you know, airfare, I'm buying hotels, food, you know, anything else along the lines. And I guess better question to this is, who funded those sorts of activities for the RBTs?
Paige and I did. As the parents, it's the same policy that all of our parents follow for community outings. It's a pretty, again, a pretty general rule of thumb in the whole field of ABA that when you go on a community outing, parents are responsible for all of the expenditures for the RBT. If you go to Jump Street, the RBT doesn't pay for themselves. The company doesn't pay for the RBTs. The parents are responsible for those costs. And that was something that Paige and I made a decision as a couple and as parents that was an expense we were willing to take on in exchange for the experience of getting to take the kids to Mexico.
And so Adventure ABA did not cover the costs of transportation for those RBTs, did not cover their hotel rooms, did not cover their food.
Paige and I paid for that out of our pocket.
Okay.
And again, all of this was discussed with Nicole Holmes, and we were given the stamp of approval from her as well. Again, I think that is a really important piece to note that when we set up our relationship with Nicole Holmes, we wanted to be parents. So we did go to her with questions. We waited for her approval before we did things. I always joke, you know, the old saying, the cobbler's kid has no shoes. Sometimes you guys should see me try and put a behavior on extinction. It's terrible. When it's my kids, oh man, my youngest daughter, Scarlett Rose, she has those eyes and she looks at me and she gets whatever she wants. And so again, I think that's where really I knew I needed a BCBA that was going to give me the stamp of approval. And that was really how we set it up. Again, we talked to her, you know, she helped us work out the schedule for the RBTs, kind of what they were going to work on when they were there. We told her that we were paying the expenses. You know, we kind of worked out the whole situation. She was fully aware of everything at the time. And she did give us that stamp of approval as another BCBA and licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, thank you for the clarification around the funding of those areas. And Mr. Chair, I'll pause there for just 1 second. I just need to kind of review some of my notes, if that's okay.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions.
Yeah, Dr. Rates.
So in terms of the RBTs, and this is not in specific reference to your trip, but the RBTs that supported your children, did those RBTs also report to you for other cases that you supervised as a BCBA?
No, none. That was
okay. So they did not have any interaction with you as a BCBA if they were also involved with your children's case.
Correct.
And the same for assistant, your term for the assistant behavior analyst.
Yes. So, and again, we did have a situation where two of the kids or two of the RBTs that were working on my kids' cases at the time did make that decision on their own to go back to school to pursue their BCBA. They had expressed to our HR team at the time that they did not necessarily want to do that with Nicole Holmes, just because they really liked the benefits that our assistant supervisor program set up. And so at that time, again, when that was the case, we did end up introducing new RBTs onto our case, onto our kids' cases to make sure that, again, we were trying to accommodate the best needs of everybody. Again, just with a weird situation. Again, it's a unique experience that only I've had to navigate, unfortunately. And like I said, we've turned out some amazing behavior analysts over the years, and my kids have made unbelievable progress. But yeah, like I said, we did it very intentionally that the RBTs would never work on Paige or myself's cases or any of the other cases. In fact, for anybody else at the company, the RBTs only worked on Nikki's cases, which would be my three kids. We did that intentionally. Two RBTs, three kids, only worked with Nikki. And then even if the RBTs did go back to school, we assigned them a different supervisor that wasn't Paige and I on purpose.
So then can you help me understand, how did you manage as a company the reporting structure and how they would communicate? So if you have these two RBTs that are reporting to a contracting BCBA, they're on your case, but something comes up from an HR issue as it applies to their role in your company. What did that look like and how did you plan for that?
Yep. And I'll preface my answer with the fact that Adventure ABA actually was quite a large company. We had over 100 employees at one point. So again, I think that is really important information because, again, there's a lot of people that were in between RBTs and Paige and myself. And so, again, that was really something that we had set up intentionally. If there ever was a situation, it's not like the RBTs would come to Paige and myself. No, they had, again, let's say they needed to call out sick. They had a scheduling line, just like all the rest of the RBTs. They would call that scheduling line. They would let that scheduling line know that they would be out that day. The scheduling line would call Paige and I as parents, just as any other parent would get a phone call from the scheduling line, and let us know that our session was going to be canceled that day because the therapist was out sick, and we would need to make accommodations for our own childcare or whatever the case may be. So again, we made sure that the RBTs had access to all of those things without any interference from Paige and I. And again, that was very important to us just to maintain those boundaries.
I don't have any other questions on this topic. Dr. Davey, I don't know if you do.
No, not right this second.
I guess my only other question, and again, this is, you know, I can appreciate this the space that you're in and how challenging it can be when you wear two hats and have to be very clear about which hat you're wearing. But perhaps you can share with me information on how you directed RBTs, for example, if they asked you questions about your own child's case, mm-hmm. that really are questions that should be going to a supervising BCBA. So asking about making a change to a program or moving a program along or adjusting, how was that managed and what did you have in place?
I think because we set it up from the get-go that the RBTs, generally, if an RBT was starting on our kid's case, they were a new hire. They never had any interaction with Paige and I beforehand. They were strictly interacting with Nikki basically from day one that they started doing direct sessions. They only ever interacted with Nikki on a clinical standpoint. And so again, I can't even think of a single time when one of the RBTs had approached me about a clinical question. Again, the RBTs would approach me, hey, what did Scarlett eat for breakfast this morning? She seems really hungry. But that's a very normal parent question. But again, I've never had any issues with them approaching me about clinical concerns because they had, again, Nikki actually supervised the kids probably 10 hours a week. And so again, they had a lot of access to Nikki, and we did set it up Nikki was their point of contact basically from day one of doing direct sessions.
And then I just want to pivot to a different topic. We were talking about supervision, and I just want to, for clarity's sake, what I hear you say, and so if you can confirm for me, your statement is that all of your clients, your RBTs, received adequate supervision.
Yeah.
And that you opted to not bill for some of those supervision services, but it is your statement that they were receiving at least the minimum, if not more. They were meeting the amount of supervision that you had placed in your treatment plans,
Again, we request generally a pretty generous amount of supervision in the treatment plans, given that we all know as behavior analysts, there are some weeks when I need to supervise a kid for 6 hours because he's developed a self-vomiting behavior or whatever the case may be. And then there are some weeks when I need to supervise that kiddo for 1 hour because everything is going pretty smooth. Again, so for me to full on say that we've met every, that we've fulfilled every recommendation within a treatment modification or in a treatment plan would be inaccurate. But again, I'm speaking to all of you guys as behavior analysts, knowing that we don't always fulfill everything we request. But as long as, again, we're meeting those requirements, and I think the proof is in the progress.
So your statement, and I can appreciate what you're sharing, but your statement is that when you are creating these treatment plans, you are, to the best of your ability and judgment, making a clinical decision on what you believe this individual needs in terms of supervision, and that you were providing that. Of course, sometimes it might be a little higher, sometimes it might be slightly lower based on the needs of that individual in that current moment, but you are making those decisions with your clinical knowledge unique to that individual, and it's your statement that that was provided at that level.
Yes.
Dr. Reitz, any further question at this moment? Hey, Essie, I note your hand up. Do you have a comment for clarification in what we're discussing at this time?
I do. I wanted to just mention that the progress notes, both billed and unbilled, that we received to try to understand the integrity of the whole treatment are as we have delivered to you. So the presence or absence of the supervisor was not a checkbox. It was in the narrative of the RBT note. The catalyst notes that we have from other providers, having always included the entire case, this, as I mentioned before, was an outlier in terms of keeping notes in a separate database. And the content of those notes on occasion would have content that dealt with program modification or feedback to the RTC, but rarely. And you have those notes, and so you can see the content of those notes. It was difficult for us to ascertain how they fit into the case in terms of supervision.
Thank you.
Can I add one thing, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Mr. Huff.
So I think it's important to note that one of the issues that SZ and I had in our clinical discussions was the nature of 97155. That is actually a treatment modification code. It is not a supervision code. Again, one of the things that I continued to try and navigate with her was what exactly we needed direct feedback. I requested direct feedback from Blue Cross Blue Shield about what they wanted specifically in our notes several times and was never given any sort of direct feedback, just you need to read the interqual standards. And again, per my understanding, the 97155 code is not a supervision code. That was changed when we switched to the 9 codes, that those session notes should strictly focus on treatment modification and data analysis.
Committee members, any further questions for Mr. Huff or the complaints?
Yeah, I have two follow-ups. One is around supervision while in Mexico. So how you, at least for some of the sub notes, I think I pieced together maybe 3 or 4 days in Mexico, somewhere in that period of time. So how did supervision occur there? Obviously, you know, contradictory statements from Ms. Holmes, where we've got text messages of saying, glad you could be in Mexico. And then, you know, a year or so later, not remembering that you were in Mexico. To the best of your recollection, how did supervision of those RBTs and following the protocols that were outlined for that trip, how was supervision delivered?
So supervision was delivered, like I mentioned, we made sure that the RBTs had all of access to all of their stuff that they would need to be able to run an adequate session, part of that being, you know, a data plan on their iPads that worked in Mexico. As well as the resort we were staying at had adequate Wi-Fi. Each RBT did have a check-in meeting with Nicole Holmes while we were in Mexico. Again, I just distinctly remember scheduling that piece out for them as part of their time. Again, to what extent or what happened during those meetings is not, I can't speak to. Again, I was operating a parental role. But per Nikki's request, she did want to have a chance to check in with those RBTs while we were in Mexico. And so we made sure that they had the time to do that and the resources in order to do so.
And then a clarification, and maybe it's this is more towards SZ. You know, I'm trying to square up your comment about the clinician presence document. So on the SOAP note, I can see a provider, in this case, Nicole Holmes, with the therapist's name. On the catalyst piece documentation that's provided, there does appear to be a checkbox. So I just wonder if I'm not understanding what you're saying, or if I could just get a clarification there, SC, I'd appreciate it.
It's actually the participant's box. Sorry, it's a participant's box on the SOAP note.
Well, in the notes that may be available from earlier than maybe the current format that's being used, there was no checkbox on participants. There was a statement in the narrative of the note, the supervisor was not present. Mm-hmm. The statement is written in the note, the supervisor was not present. Now, if that is generated by the EHR from a checkbox, I would not be aware of that. What I see is a narrative sentence that says the supervisor was or was not present for this session.
And that's it, and that's in something titled SOAP note report?
That is in a daily note that would have been conducted by an RVT. Typically, you know, there's a date, there's a time, there's a billing code, 97153, if I recall. The individuals who were present, which might include a combination of parents and or siblings and or nannies and or other, and then a note that says progress on in this session would say the supervisor was or was not present. Almost every note had a comment on the presence of a supervisor. Almost every RBT note that we looked at.
Dr. Davey, there's some examples approximately around page 30 of the report, for if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think I was also looking at some of the documentation that was provided with regard to central reach activity. So like the things that are titled for the committee's pleasure, page 30 of the PDF, those look to be, this SOAP note that's being generated by the billing system. And then I believe is supplemental information that we received from, that's in our Google Drive. There's some information there that kind of shows, see if I can go back and toggle to that. Document supplied. Patient charts, first one, EH, report, session notes. Yeah, I was looking at central reach activity logs that essentially have an activity log that have a reference number when they're prepared, will include information on the client, will have the 97153 code, has a date, has a start time, stop time, has information with regard to who the provider was, has a client signature and then a provider signature. I'm not sure why client signature is on file in this case. Looks like the provider signs off on it and then makes those a reference to any notes that are provided. Then in the notes that are generated from the session notes section, it does give a start time again. That is where I see the checkbox of client name, you know, check if supervisor overlapped checkbox on those session notes. And then inside of those session notes, you've got information with regard to, it looks as if, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. F, looks as if you use the learning tree inside of Central Reach because these are tied to the branch names for Central Reach and the one I'm looking at, and then has current data points, current phase, and information about the session.
I will be very honest. Paige had to do more software training with me than probably any other employee. I am not a tech savvy guy. So learning trees and stuff in Central Reach, I honestly have no idea what you're referencing. But I know that, again, that stuff was all set up in Central Reach that we could take those adequate notes to meet the standards of a SOAP note and things like that. But again, I didn't set up the Central Reach. I really am not a tech savvy person. I just did the notes.
And so I think the question then here is looking at the session notes, you know, and the one I'm looking at, and committee members, I'm more than happy to walk you through the drive of where I'm looking if that would be helpful. Would that be helpful?
So yes, please, Dr. Davey.
Yeah, let's see if I can do it. So I went into, let's see if I can just click back. So this would be under, obviously, materials for number 4A. And then underneath those materials, there is another section called attachment supplied, 5-9-2023. You follow me? Next, Exhibit C, patient charts. And then from patient charts, I just clicked on the very first one, EH. And then that is where there is another folder called Central Reach Activity Statements. Following along?
Yep.
Okay. And then from there, I literally clicked on, you know, click on any of them. I clicked on July, and that is where I'm, you know, kind of following along. So as you kind of scroll through this particular client, you'll see, you know, information on the code, information on who's signing off on things. Right at the bottom of that, you know, what's labeled page 1 of 20, you'll see that check if supervisor overlapped. Then you'll get into branch names for the session. You'll get notes on the session and some more information with regard to what's going on. Looks like there you have group supervision 97156 being signed off by Dylan Huff from 6 to 7 with regard to this via telehealth. Actually a family training via telehealth, misspoke, being signed off on there. But it does, you know, in terms of SZ's review of that, that box is not checked. And then very quickly underneath it, you've got, you know, supervisor essentially attesting to another service that's occurring, you know, concurrently with service. But in this case, it looks like it's a group family session that they've stepped into. But yeah, it doesn't, you know, the record does not have that indicated as occurring. And so I can definitely see SC's point of that is confusing when you have a very clear ask of something, and then you have a secondary documentation following right below it of the event occurring. And the session notes, and just for the committee's point, I mean, I think the session notes with regard to what the RBTs are engaged in when I was reviewing it looked solid in terms of what they were working on, recording information on progress or lack thereof, and then also providing a general session information note. They look much stronger than the SOAP notes when I reviewed them side by side. I did not have the ability to track progress, obviously, for these particular clients and look at any sort of trajectory that was mentioned by SC in her statement that there was a lack of progress being achieved. And so I could not ascertain that in my review of what was presented to us. But I will say that it's consistently that checkbox, if supervisor overlapped, is not selected time and time again. There are the occasion where, sure enough, it does, but the majority seem to have been missed. And so I guess my question to you, Mr. Huff, is that is something that shows up on the BT, the RBT side as they're creating their session note, that's their responsibility to check that or not check it?
Yeah. And then I think the hard thing is, so like you mentioned, the 97156 I never checked that box because I was the supervisor rendering the service. So like that was a parent training 97156. I wouldn't check that I was there because I was the one writing the note, rendering it as a BCBA. And then when we switched from Central Reach over to AccuPoint, then our system got switched. We had a little bit different of what we needed to do. And that's why we switched from the checkbox to the participants box, which that's where the RBTs again would generally fill out who was present in the session. And again, it was one of the number one things we caught in our audits is them not adequately filling out like who all is present, because let's say I supervised from 9 to 11, but session time was actually 9 to 12. I don't know how many times RBTs at the end of the day would just rush through their session note, and in the participants pot would put peers, therapist, client. And we'd have to go back and be like, hey, I was here from 9 to 11. You need to also put BCBA present. But again, that was something that changed when we switched from our billing softwares.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions, Dr. Rates? Okay. Dr. Davey, any further?
I don't believe so.
Okay. All right. Okay, so the committee will now begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Davey, would you please begin?
Yeah, I think two things kind of kick off the discussion. One, like I fully want to state that I respect the position you're in as dad, and then as parents, and wanting to do the things you can do for your children to make sure that they're going to make as much progress in their life as possible. I think that that's that kind of advocacy is something that we all in this field appreciate and sometimes take for granted, in terms of parents really pushing forward, or caregivers really pushing forward to make sure that the kinds of services or the kinds of treatments or the kinds of experiences that those that are entrusted in our care as parents, that they get, or they're afforded all of those. And sometimes those require parents to really look at innovative ways to make that happen, maybe look at ways to make sure that those are afforded for their loved ones. So I think that it's important that for everyone here to recognize that I fully understand that. I think the second part of that is understanding that and being in a position of power, and being in a position of understanding what ABA services looks like, feels like, tastes like, the amount of intensity involved in ABA services, the amount of supervision and oversight that's required for those kinds of services, to the point of where, in this case, an agency is essentially birthed out of those constraints, right? That, with that should have come some thought around those multiple relationships and the hazards that they, that they presented not only to the adults in this case, but also to the children. And so I look at the list of ethics code violations that's, suggested in the complaint, everything from truthfulness and accountability to harassment and accuracy in billing and, interference with service delivery and some other things that are in there. But I think the one that I am most concerned and around is that multiple relationships piece. And it's not to say that the documentation is great by any means. I still am struggling with the the lack of understanding of their EHR system to be able to put a non-billable note in there. You know, obviously I can't go back in time and listen in on the conversation between them and AccuPoint or them and Central Reach. But from my, you know, I have a hard time squaring up that this was the best thing to do was to separate the system and not have non-billables in their system, particularly as it relates to something as critical as supervision. I mean, supervision is the hallmark of much of what we do. It is a critical element as outlined by, you know, by all of our professional associations and all of our professional documentations, that that dosage around ABA and to SC's point, while it is not, you know, not in gospel, not in stone, that the onus is on us as individual clinicians to understand what does this child need, what does this child deserve to be able to make that progress, whether it's 2 hours to every 10 or, you know, 5 hours to every 10 because of where that child's at. And when we make the recommendations to the number of hours of supervision that would be required for a case, that we're making that based on clinical requirements, clinical need for that, medical necessity around that particular child. And progress can be directly tied back to the quality and quantity of supervision for our clients. And so I take, you know, it's hard to believe that we would not want to see from an organization RBT supervision logs, RBT documentation of RBT supervision, documentation that's going off at such an extraordinary rate as to ensure that the direct treatment that's being provided by an extension of the licensed individuals, in this case the RBTs, is doing exactly what we purport our field and science can do. And so that to me is also concerning. I also would like to, you know, for those on the call and maybe for Mr. Huff, is, you know, I understand that, and I think you understand as well, and if you don't, you can correct me, but when we talk about supervision, you know, you're not incorrect in saying that there is not a code 97XXX that says supervision of RBTs. But 97155 in its language from the CPT and AMA is about adaptive treatment modification, right? Protocol modification that's administered by, you know, physician, qualified healthcare plan professional, in this case, a licensed behavior analyst, that could include you being right there simultaneously, you know, directing with the technician. But it does require face-to-face, whether it's telehealth or face-to-face, whether it's you in the room with them, that is requirement of 97155. And therefore, you know, many of the funders, and I think it would be disingenuous for us as behavior analysts and licensed behavior analysts, many of the funders take that as saying, hey, listen, we recognize that supervision is a requirement for you. However, you know, supervision for most people is an HR component, not a clinical component. And so the funders actually extend to us through contracts and through their service delivery agreements with us that, hey, we recognize supervision is needed of these individuals, and 97155 is the vehicle for that. And so I think that, you know, it's unfair for us to say that there's to point to a plan that's working through this, just as they're learning us and we're learning them, to saying that there's confusion around that code. I don't believe that that's a fair statement in our field. I think that it's been it's quite clear through either service delivery agreements with the funders of what the expectations are around individuals being afforded the supervision they are required as RBTs to make sure that we're making progress. So I think I'll pause there with my discussion, but, you know, my concerns to summarize around the dual relationships and kind of the failure to recognize as things are being set up that there were not safety nets there. Even as things are moving forward, not recognizing that safety nets, you know, may need to be in place, that, you know, the individual is a contractor through Adventure ABA. They're not being paid privately by mom and dad at this point, which again, I think blurs the line. I was glad to hear that Mr. Huff was, you know, from his previous experience, came to recognize that if you're going to go on a family trip, which is absolutely amazing, that, you know, you have some safety guards there. It was good to hear that that was fully funded by the parents and not funded by the agency, and that they, you know, attempted to have some walls around that. But overall, I believe there was a failure around managing those multiple relationships and a lack of understanding, even as the relationship progressed, that there was, that there could have been that position of power that could ultimately create conflicts. And second to that, just some concerns around the supervision of RBTs in general. Thank you.
Dr. Rhodes, do you have any comment?
If I have anything to add, I would say that I agree with all of Dr. Davies' comments, and those would be the two areas that I still have some lingering concerns as well.
I'm going to add, I don't want to iterate everything that Dr. Davies has said. Mr. Huff is planning on leaving the 30th of June, and I do have some concerns that while he expressed some changes in procedure at the company, that company may still there still may be lingering issues there. And I do have those concerns. I don't know if any committee members want to have further discussion about that, but the company is not dissolving contingent on his exit. The company will continue to operate as far as I understand it. And well, Mr. Huff, his name is on this, and he is one that we were discussing with. There is a continuing company that is there. And so I don't know if we need to have any further discussion about that at this time, but it is a concern.
I think I'd like to make a request to go into executive session for the sole purpose of receiving legal advice.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 Go to executive session.
We're still in deliberation. Dr. Davey, would you like to pick up?
Yeah, I believe that, you know, just in summary of some of the things we said before, seeking legal advice, you know, in looking at the information that's provided and the verbal testimony that we hear today from the licensee as well as the complaints, you know, in terms of, you know, areas that I would probably move forward to, you know, recommend to the board to take a look at would be, you know, under 32.2091.12 unprofessional conduct, you know, it's most likely going to fall under two particular categories. It's going to fall under H, which has to do with failing or refusing to maintain or retain adequate records pertaining to services provided. And then probably DD, which has to do with violating an ethical standard adopted by the board. And in terms of the ethical standards would be related to the ethics code for behavior analysts, particularly related to 1.11 of mutual relationships. And then with regard to documentation, probably 4.05, which is down to maintaining supervision documentations. You know, those are really the areas that I see raising to the level of concern on my part at this particular time, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Davey. And I want to take a moment. Ms. Michelson, would you provide us the next word for the CEs?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the second code word for continuing education credit is barbecue. Again, that code word is barbecue.
All right, thank you. And Dr. Davey, Dr. Rates, I'd like to propose that maybe we withhold any motions at this time and hear and maybe put those in later after we hear the remaining cases in which Mr. Huff's involved.
But the committee, I believe that Dr. Davey did a good job setting forth the conduct and the possible violations. Would you want to take a vote at this time, determining that these are the findings and violation that the committee has, and then we'll consolidate with the other cases and take any possible adjudication or recommendation together at that time, so we can vote on this and it won't get overseen or kind of lost.
Okay, Ms. Galvin, thank you. Committee members?
Yeah, I think that makes sense because in terms of recommendations beyond that, I think I need to hear some information with some of the pending cases that are coming up with regard to other other requests we've made of Mr. Huff, and to be able to understand whether or not we have all of our all of the mechanisms we have to be able to help with rehabilitation in this case.
Okay. All right. So Ms. Galvin, do we need to make a motion then and vote on it? Is that what you were suggesting?
Yes, with respect to the findings and conclusions, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Dr. Davey, would you like to make a motion on that?
Yes, I'll go ahead and make the motion that with regard to areas that rise to, that may potentially rise to a level of a statutory violation under 32-2091-12 on professional conduct, that would have to do with H with regard to maintaining adequate records, and then DD, other ethics codes that the board has adopted, in this case, the ethics code for behavior analysts, which would be 1.11, as well as 4.05.
Okay, all right. Do I have a second for that? Okay, and then any further discussion?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the verbal on the second.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Rates, you're...
Dr. Rates, okay, sorry, I wasn't looking out.
Okay. So any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. We will take a, would 5 minutes be sufficient or 10? Well, let's do 10 minutes. We'll do a 10 minute. We'll reconvene at 10:50. So we'll take a comfort break and reconvene at 10:50. Four complaints on the agenda. Number 4B through E against Dylan Huff, Paige Huff, Diamond Smith, and Abigail Barnes were filed by the same complaint in EF, an RBT who previously worked with the agency owned by Paige and Dylan Huff. These four complaints were previously reviewed by the committee at its meeting on March 30th. The committee voted to table these matters to obtain additional information from the parties. That information has been received. Given this, I'll ask the assigned lead for the case, Dr. Rates, to provide a brief overview of the complaint and any updates specific to this complaint. The complaint will have an opportunity with case to make comments that are specific to the complaint's response. I do note that I believe EF is not here. Let me just double check to make sure. Is that Ms. Pacanon, is that accurate? EF is not present. Okay, thank you. All right. So Dr. Rates, if you would please give us a brief overview that the necessary pieces and we'll move on from there.
Yes, thank you. So as you already shared, this was reviewed previously and the committee did ask for additional information prior to any decisions. Information was received from each of the individuals. Overall, the areas that we need to review and discuss today are related to documentation of policy and procedure, specifically documentation related to incidents that were identified for a number of clients, and additionally supervision and billing practices. So we do have four complaints to review. And as I said, that is an overview for all four. And Mr. Chair, if we want to start with the first, we can do that.
Okay, thank you. And yeah, as Dr. Rates stated, we will address these each individually, but within the context of being a whole. So let's see here. So Mr. Huff and Ms. Quinn, would you please unmute yourselves? And then again, for this, please state your name, full names for the record. And then again, you each, or you'll have a brief 5 minutes to make a statement, and then the committee may have further questions for you.
I'm Dylan Huff.
And Brianna Quinn, counsel for Mr. Huff. I do not have an opening statement, so I'll turn it to my client.
Thank you.
Thank you, board. So yeah, we already reviewed these complaints. Thank you guys for the opportunity to provide you with the further documentation. I think that you guys will get a chance to look at that documentation and see that these complaints really did not involve me to an extent. Again, we discussed one of my clients, and again, I am more than happy to provide the procedure that I would have followed if it did raise to a concern of needing to be taken to Child Protective Services. And then I also, you know, provided you guys with the documentation showing the billing records. And again, even Dr. Davey pointed out last time that the billing records I provided with this time match almost exactly what we're all kind of used to in this field of having supervisees under us while we try and navigate that. That's all I have to say at this time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Huff. Any questions for Mr. Huff at this time?
I can start. Mr. Huff, related to the incidents that was referenced for MS, you indicate that nothing raised to the level of concern. If you can just, again, share for us from what I reviewed, it seems that the individual shared with you some concerns that they had. You talked through that. You had been in that client's home. You had worked with that client. You did not feel that this was something that needed to be reported anywhere. Can you just give me a little bit more?
Yep. So yeah, this client, MK, again, I've worked with him for quite some time. Again, I got really to know his family. I did some parent trainings out at their home, did parent trainings with his mom via Zoom, again, fully being able to see their home. And again, it looks pretty much like my house as a parent of kids with special needs. There's toys everywhere, there's clothes everywhere. But again, nothing to the extent that would ever raise any concern. And so when EF brought the initial concern to me that the client himself stated that he didn't have a toothbrush at home, and that there was apparently some gossip or concerns going around the clinic that he was wearing the same clothes. I did provide EF with that reassurance that, again, I've been out to the home. I'd seen that the kiddo has a toothbrush. Again, I had told her that I'd also been working with the caregivers on some of the rigidity in the behaviors regarding the clothing and things. And I pointed out to her, too, that those clothes that he was wearing every day, they were still clean. Again, it's not like he was coming through with them soiled in urine day in and day out. And again, generally as a BCBA, when we do have those concerns, again, I take those concerns to a parent training. I discuss kind of what's going on with the family, you know, and again, put goals in place if we need to. In this case, again, these are things you're already working on with mom at home. Again, the rigidity with the behaviors also surrounded toothbrushing. And again, so mom was making progress on those goals. And so, again, I had no reason to raise any sort of next level up to Child Protective Services. Again, parents were complying with plans and the kid was making progress at home. And again, it was a pretty minimal incident, the child making a comment himself of not having a toothbrush.
And in general, when you have a therapist that makes statements and you have these kinds of conversations, how would you document that?
So generally, as you guys have probably realized, I'm quite the talker. So yeah, and in this particular incident, again, I didn't even receive this complaint in an email. Again, I had received this, EF had brought this to my attention just in passing, literally in the clinic. And so I had just provided her with reassurance. Again, I did not even at the time, EF didn't provide me even with enough concern that I felt it was necessary for me to even document. She just made a passing comment. Hey, Dylan, MK said that he doesn't have a toothbrush at home. Is there any chance we can just send him one home? That was literally all she said to me. Nothing about her being concerned for the safety or well-being of him. I just literally told her, yeah, I'll check with mom to see if he needs another toothbrush at home. But I literally was just out there and they're working on toothbrushing. He just doesn't like it. And that was literally, again, there was nothing. I'm concerned about his well-being. Aaron didn't express anything like that. Again, if a therapist comes to me and they do have concerns and they express to me that they want to take something to CPS, that they feel like something is wrong or the well-being of the child's at risk, then yeah, we generally have more of a formal meeting. And it's usually not just me. Usually we'll have two clinicians in to kind of work with that RBT to kind of talk about what's been going on and document that situation with our HR department. If it happens during a session, again, if a RBT makes a comment of something like that during a session, then also usually we get included in our session note in the additional information section of those.
And then the only other question I have is around the billing practices. So you did share that with us. I don't see anything with your name being billed, but interestingly, I don't see any supervision in that log. And so I just wondered if you could comment to that.
Yep. And so that was, again, part of the same thing we've been working on about integrating those systems. So again, Abigail Barnes was the one providing supervision to that client during that month when EF obviously claimed that I was billing simultaneously for sessions I wasn't there for. But Abigail Barnes wasn't a licensed behavior analyst at the time, nor in network with that child's insurance. So again, I have those email, I provided some of those email correspondences of what that usually looks like between me and my supervisees when they are not licensed professionals. So given that Abby was a BCBA at that time and it was a case that she was going to take on, it was one that, again, I was pretty hands-off. Again, she had graduated, she had passed her exam. It wasn't like I was still going out there to do supervision directly with the client because, again, she was an independent clinician at that point. I just was still checking her notes. We were still corresponding back and forth about, different program updates and things like that. But during that month, the child did receive supervision from Abigail.
Those are all the questions I have right now, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Davey?
I have no questions at this particular point.
Okay, all right. Okay, I do not have any further questions either. Let's see. We'll go ahead. I'm just trying to think where we're at here. Okay, so at this point, we'll begin our deliberation again. This time is deliberation just among the committee members. So we may continue to ask questions, but there's no interruptions from complainants, licensees or attorneys representing licensees. So Dr. Rates, would you please begin the deliberation?
Yes. So for me, I think, this is conversation we've already had today, but I think there are some concerns in just better understanding the supervision and documentation of that. I can appreciate that. No, we do not see that there was any kind of double billing happening for that month that was reported in what we have seen. But again, concerned that I don't see a supervision, any supervision in that record. In terms of the client safety issue, again, I think that what was shared, at least by the complainant, matches what we are hearing from Mr. Huff. I would say here, and you're going to hear this again and again from me in the next several minutes and hour, but I would strongly advise that there be better documentation happening across the practice of all of the behavior analysts that we are talking to, and any agency have strong policies and procedures in place for documentation.
Thank you, Dr. Rates. Dr. Davey?
I would just agree with what Dr. Raitt said. I think it's a documentation issue at this particular point. Like the verbal behavior here is, yeah, we do it, we've got it. But if it's not written down, you know, it's not happening. And I think that, you know, we can continue to kind of run into the situation where it's hard to verify. You know, I can trust, but I like to verify. And that piece is just still lacking there for me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. And I'm not going to reiterate everything. I agree with both of you. Dr. Raitt, would you like to make a motion at this time, or?
I wonder if we want to make a motion at this point, or if we want to review and make a motion after we have gone over each one.
You may wish to make a motion articulating whether you believe that there were any facts in this case that led to a possible violation. And then if you believe that there were facts that led to a possible violation, hold off on making a recommendation until we adjudicate the other case.
So for me, for this 2320, I believe it is, I do not see anything that would rise to a violation.
Okay. All right. Do I have a second on that?
If that's the consensus of the committee that there was no violation, you could take a vote, make a motion to, you know, recommend dismissal of this case. And then we will not have to consolidate it with the other cases with respect to a possible disciplinary action if that's where the committee decides to go.
So I'm happy to make that motion for this specific 2320 that we move to dismiss.
Do I have a second on that?
A second.
Okay. Discussion? All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. So complaint, where are we at here? Complaint number 2320, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, we just finished complaint 4B2320, so the next one for review is 4C23-19 for Ms. Huff's complaint.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Okay, so next complaint scheduled for review is 2319 against Paige Huff. Dr. Raitt, again, you were the lead on this and you provided an overview, but is there anything additional that you would like to add to this complaint?
No, I think the overview that I provided is sufficient. I can add more when we move into our deliberation.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. And as noted earlier, the complaint is not present. So Ms. Huff and Ms. Stark, would you please unmute yourselves and state your full names for the record? And again, this is an opportunity to provide a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have additional questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Sarah Stark, and I'm an attorney for Paige Huff.
I am Paige Huff.
And I will make a very brief statement and then I'll turn it over to the committee for questions. As the committee members know, I'm relatively new to this case. I was not there for the last meeting. So, you know, I took the minutes and we compiled what we believed was the additional documentation that the committee had requested. You should have all of that in your materials. And, you know, we're happy to answer any questions you have related to that documentation. I will also just say as an initial matter, Ms. Huff was referenced multiple times in a prior complaint that was before the committee, the first complaint this morning. That is not something that we are prepared to discuss as we were noticed for the 2319 case, which are related to the allegations with complainant EF. So if there is any discussion around those specific allegations as it relates to Ms. Huff, we would ask the opportunity to review, respond, and present additional information at a later time. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Chairman, for any questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Stark. All right. Any questions from committee members?
I have a few.
Yeah, Dr. Ritz.
Thank you. Ms. Huff, thank you for supplying all of the documentation that was requested. I have reviewed, in particular, your document related to incident reports, and I have a couple questions for you. What you shared for us in terms of the incident related to, I believe, the code is SR, is sort of just a Word document with some notes. However, in your policy document, it indicates that there are these incident reports that are completed, that are filed in a different storage space. You indicate when a incident, sort of a full incident report, would be filed. Can you walk me through what is that incident report? Is that what you shared with us, which is just this Word document, or is it something more formal?
It's more formal. The document was the investigation after the incident report.
Okay. So I'm just going to review. I don't know that, and other fellow committee members, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know that I see anything related to this other than a Word document that has some timestamps of when conversations happened. So was there a full incident report that happened as a result of this incident?
The therapist did submit them. In that time, we did paper incident reports, so it is in our filing cabinet, but we had, because the supervisor was present, the incident report was automatically investigated, or an assistant supervisor was present.
So are you saying we did not get a copy of the handwritten that's in the file of the incident report, or are you saying you did submit that?
It should be in the files, but if it did not go, I can submit it.
Dr. Rates and committee members, I do not recall receiving that from Ms. Stark. I just have the type document, Dr. Rates, that you're referring to.
Okay. So for fellow committee members, I'm looking at page 617 mm-hmm. of the large document that we have. And the policy is referenced on 614. So what you're sharing with me today is that you did, in fact, this was considered a full incident. You do have an incident report, and you just failed to get that to us for today.
Yeah, it was so we have an incident report from the therapist, and then we documented it ourselves, and that's what the paper is from.
And is there any other process you go through other than this? I think you called it an internal investigation, or what did you just refer to?
We just call it an investigation. We investigate after incident reports by reviewing cameras and talking to staff members. So when we have an incident report, like, you know, not just like a client had a little slip, you know, in the kitchen, but like something a little bit more, we go through, we review cameras, we go through and talk to parents. We discuss everything with any employees. If it's an employee injury, then we are going to go through and discuss and watch cameras and look at that as well. And if any like medical action needs to be taken or clients sent home, that occurs.
So in your sort of investigation report, there's a discussion that you did follow up with the family member on the incident. For your policies, how do you circle back when an incident has occurred? Clearly, this was in fact an incident. You do have a report on this. Sounds like you talked to family about it. It indicates that you're going to keep an eye on it, so to speak, that if it happens again, you're going to escalate it. Where does that wraparound and follow-up documentation live? References sort of talking to a therapist so that they know what's happened. And I asked because I believe there were some just discussions about follow-up and wraparound. And so I just would like to better understand how that happens within the agency.
Yeah. So I've changed it slightly, so I have better documentation. Now it all links together and we submit it multiple times and it will link with the incident report. At that time, we just had communication via like our messaging system and Teams and stuff like that. I was actually on vacation when the incident occurred. So I was brought in and I ran home. I was actually at a concert. And so I got home and I went through everything. I talked to the therapist, the assistant supervisor who was there. And then on my own investigation, I talked to the therapist myself to see what they had seen and heard. Additionally, dad, I believe I have mentioned, has some diagnoses. So there was a lot of follow-up with in-person parent training at the house that everybody completed. So we started doing sessions in the home. We did more behavioral management, which goes along in session notes and parent training notes and direct session notes, because the assistant supervisor was the one who ended up providing it with dad. Dad specifically came to us originally for help and support with managing behaviors and not getting so frustrated based off of his own symptoms from autism. So with that, we had the documentation and all of the session notes, and then as well as continued, we still are with this family. So continued support as no other things have occurred, but we do have parent trainings monthly to go through behavior interventions, and dad is following strict behavior intervention plans and following through with behaviors in a way that is appropriate. This family has specifically been about 2 to 3 years of us following through and working on behavior intervention plans with them and our very dedicated family.
I don't know that I have any questions at this point.
Dr. Davey?
Thank you. Ms. Huff, you in the new policy around incident reports, I just want to make sure I understand that at some point you went from a paper version to an electronic click-up board where staff would then trigger fill-in information. That way you'd have like a reporting dashboard on the backside.
Yep. And then it's sorted in through by the BCBAs and automatically sorted into their files. So we're approving and looking at each person. The scheduling line is each incident report is immediately told. And then now we have a back end procedure that goes through and automatically creates a review. So X incident occurred. Now it's prompting the supervisor of the client to review the case and understand what actually occurred and who was told and who was present.
Thank you. I'm familiar with ClickUp as a management system. When did this go into a place, with regard, and in respect to the current case we're hearing today, like what's the timeline of when you move from paper to electronic?
I would have to ask, but I believe last year. I mean, a lot of my documentation has changed throughout the time that I spent with Jamie. So that was a huge part of it. Incident reports being more automatic, being able to be combined and treated that way. This incident report was actually during that time that I was still working with Jamie and I walked through it with her.
Thank you. And then, so this is like newer from your discussion with your practice manager, as well as kind of is after the fact of the case we're talking about today. Okay. And so then I read through the the statement of like what they fill out. So I'm just suggesting that they would click a form. They essentially fill out the form. Areas are mandatory for them to complete. And if I'm looking at the list correctly, locations, date and time, is it also the person, the staff member? Okay. All right. Thank you. I have no other questions about the current process. On the previous process, which of course we don't have a copy of that, of the areas that are identified under four for the incident report, with the exception of A, did you capture the same information, staff member's name, location? Is this the same information that was captured on the paper version?
Yeah, I was just through the therapist's point of view instead. So the therapists are required to submit their own as well, and they were there.
But was it like a form that they filled out, like your name, date where this happened, location where this happened, which room it happened in? Was it the same kind of prescriptive responses?
Yes, it was the exact same form, just paper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Rates or Dr. Davey, any further questions? Okay. All right. So, Dr. Rates, as we did in the previous case, would you like to make a motion?
Are we at motion or deliberation?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Rates. Good point of order. All right. Committee members are now entering deliberation. This is a time for us to discuss this without interruption. Dr. Rates, would you like to begin the deliberation, please?
Yes. So for me, you know, I appreciate that some new systems have gone into place and that there is some work being done to have better policies and more clear practices. I am quite concerned that we did not get a copy of the incident report. I'm really at a loss for why. I know it took some time to get the things that we've asked for, and I'm sort of at a loss for why that didn't come along with these other documents. I have some concerns that there doesn't seem to be really clear practices in place, at least at this point in time, for how things get wrapped around, who gets communicated, how we ensure that there is follow-up and follow-through and documentation. We are here to look at the safety and welfare of the clients that are served, and I'm a bit concerned with the lack of documentation that is in place when we've asked for further clarification. So, you know, I think it was already said once that there's, you know, lots of verbal behavior about what happens and who's notified and how things are really carefully followed up on, but I'm just not seeing the same thing in terms of policies, practices, and documentation of incidents that have occurred. So for me, that still remains a concern.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, you know, Ms. Huff, I think that we need to see that document, right? I also think, like, in terms of a ClickUp board, you can show us screenshots of how the ClickUp board is essentially created, right? I mean, the quickest way to alleviate our pain points are to demonstrate that this was occurring and demonstrate the actual workflow of what's going on now. And I just don't think that happens in what was submitted. I appreciate you submitted a large chunk of documents, but the pieces I think that I needed to see to feel like the discussion we had around this, that I don't have that in front of me right now. So it makes me think again that we're having issues with maintaining adequate business records and documentation around the operations and the operating of the clinics.
All right. Any further discussion related to that?
I don't know. Like, I guess, Dr. Rates, like, you know, at this point, it's like, are we going to continue to kick the can down the road, or are we going to, you know, do we want to, you know, do I do another request for information, be very specific, because I understand ClickUp. Like, I just really am not sure where to go as part of this, because I don't want to continue to drag all of these out. But I also you know, I know we have had a practice monitor in place. I know the documentation has gotten better. You know, I know that was demonstrated in some other areas where we, you know, in other cases where we looked at the ability to track supervision hours, which was very clear, and that documentation was very clear to us. And I feel a lot better seeing those things versus just taking everybody's word for it.
Dr. Rates, may I? Dr. Davey, I agree with you that if that documentation does in fact exist, then I would like to see mm-hmm. that. But your point of kicking the can further down the road, I mean, we're eating up time here. We're not being provided information that's being requested. But at the same time, I think we need to have the documentation, review what's available, if it is in fact available. And so I'd hate to say it, I think providing that opportunity would be ideal. So
Yeah, and I guess the question is, I guess I would repose this to Ms. Huff, like if we said today, grab that document, grab the workflow for the ClickUp board, then, you know, can you get that to us? And then maybe, you know, maybe the recommendation can come from us to get that to us in a timely fashion so that maybe we don't have to kick this down the road. We could look at it, you know, I could take it forward to the full board and understand what's happening, and we could get this matter cleaned up as well. But if you're uneasy about that documentation and you feel like this does fall into an area of where you didn't have good documentation process that we've already discussed, then let's say that now and we can move forward with that path as well. So I think that's a question either to you or to staff to your attorney. And if you need a moment to speak with your attorney on a sidebar, I'm sure we'll allow that.
Yeah. Is it okay if we have a brief sidebar?
Yes. Do you understand my request? Just so you, if it exists, great. Please show it to us. If it doesn't exist, then let's just hear it now and let's not continue. Okay.
Yes. And we're, to be clear, we're talking about an official incident report that is supposed to go along with the narrative that we provided. That's the document you're looking for.
I would also amend that to say, and any follow-up documentation that you have. So I would not want to be back in this meeting to then hear that there was other documentation and follow-up, but I haven't submitted it. So anything related to this case is what I would want to have in front of us in a timely manner. And I apologize for tone, but you know, to Dr. Davies' point, I don't think we want to have meeting after meeting where we're only getting parts of what we need to resolve issues.
And then the second part of that would be the workflow of the current process. Show us the ClickUp board of how, you know, the form that's submitted and the dashboard on the backside that it generates and the workflow of, like, you know, I know ClickUp fairly well, then alerts are triggered and people get emails. You can add people inside those boards. I want to see the schematics for that workflow.
Okay. Can you give us, how long can you give us? 10 minutes? Can we do a break or something and then?
Can move on and can we table this matter and keep moving and then you can come back?
Actually, we can, Dr. Davey. The next case does not involve Ms. Huff at this point.
Very good.
Okay. So board staff, is there a...
So Ms. Stark can send the materials to me and then I will get it over to the committee. That works for me.
Okay, we'll be back.
Thank you, Ms. Turk.
Thank you. Ms.
Okay, so we'll pause with that and we'll move on to complaint number 23-22 against Diamond Smith. Dr. Raitz, again, you're the lead and have provided an overview of the case. But if you have any additional information that's pertinent, please feel free to discuss that now.
I think the overview is sufficient. And again, I'm happy to provide more when we go into questions and deliberation.
Okay, great. Thank you. And again, just to note, the complainant EF is not present. So Ms. Smith, would you please unmute yourself and provide your full name for the record? And this is your opportunity to provide a brief up to five minute statement.
Yes. Hi, I'm Diamond Smith. In the complaint, there were two separate ones listed in the 23-2. One about me signing the training certificates, which in accordance to the BACB says that some or all of that responsibility can go to that assistant trainer. So I did it based on that, seeing that it was ethical from the BACB. So that's my statement for that portion. For the other complaint, it is about mandated reporting. So for that, I became a BCBA in April of 2022, and I got my LBA in September of 2022, and this concern occurred around June of 2022. So I went on vacation, and I was currently working under the LBAs at the company. I was still a BCBA, but I couldn't bill for the clients, and So YR, who was no longer a client, it was one of my clients at that time that I was working with the LBAs for. So I went on vacation, and when I came back from vacation, I was told that YR was no longer a client by the time I came back from vacation. And then a few days later, I, along with another leader at the company, met with a former employee named TD, who brought up concerns that were kind of like a through the grapevine concern, where they had concerns brought up to them from the van driver, who said that the client YR's mother told him that YR said that the employee HS was touching her inappropriately. So the leader and I, the other leader in the company and I, brought this concern up to those in higher positions in the company because it was something we had not, you know, encountered before. I'm so sorry, I have a cat in my life. That we had not encountered before. And it was also, you know, a concern brought about an employee and a client at the same time. And it was, again, through that grapevine kind of situation. So we brought it to the owners and those higher up in the company, and we did an investigation. So we looked at the schedules for both HR and YR to see if there were any overlapping times. If there were any overlapping sessions between those two, which is some of the documentation that I provided to you guys. And there were no overlapping sessions or those things in there. I do know that in EF's complaint, they mentioned that sometimes the employee would be alone with both clients, but that would be in the classroom. And typically, I also included this in my original information about it. Typically, during that time, the transition time, very often they would be in my office and we would be hanging out, because having both of those clients was difficult for HS, just because they were the kind of clients who know that if one elopes in one direction and the other elopes in the other direction, then you have to pick one or the other to run towards. So typically they'd be like in my office filling out body mark sheets, which is something that I listed in there too. And with one of the clients being a female and the other client being a male, they wouldn't have gone to the bathroom. We did actually start doing bathroom buddy system just to make sure that everybody made sure that they had a bathroom buddy during that time. I provided the documentation based on the schedules, the statements, what happened between YR and HS, all of those different things I included. I can say that during that time span, I did not hear from YR's mother. YR's mother sent, at the time when they discontinued services, an email to the owners, I believe. I'm sorry, I wasn't included on that email, saying that they weren't receiving services anymore. And so when I got back from vacation, that was what I was told.
All right, thank you. All right, so any questions for Ms. Smith?
I have a couple. Okay. So similar to what I was asking earlier, is there a formal incident report that was filed for this situation?
For this one, it was not an incident report because it was a through the grapevine thing that did not officially happen at the during those session times that we had. So we did do the documentation of conversations and meeting with the van driver, meeting with TD, but not a formal incident report.
My other question is, to your knowledge, was there any conversation with the family after this was reported? I understand that they had ended services, but was there any conversation with the family after this?
To my knowledge, again, I wasn't contacted with this information either from the family. This was a through the grapevine. I was told along the process.
So nobody indicated to you that anyone had reached out to the family to follow up regarding the statements that the mother had made?
Not that I can recall at this time.
And then I believe there was a discussion that there was perhaps some reporting that was done by a therapist who maybe no longer is with the company. We asked this in the last meeting, and I will ask it again. Has there been, to your knowledge, a formal investigation at any time with an outside agency?
No.
So thank you for providing some answers to those questions. My other question, I think in terms of the supervision and signing off, I think I appreciate what you've submitted. I think it was similar to what we saw last time. For me, I think it meets the standard in terms of that space. So with regard to the supervision, again, I appreciate you submitting and walking us through what that looks like. And that looks sufficient for me. I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay, thank you, Dr.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to briefly give the third code word for continuing education credit. We're at that mark. The code word is picnic. Again, that code word is picnic. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Dr. Davey, any further questions?
I have no questions, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Reitz, would you like to make a motion regarding
this? Deliberate. Case?
Thank you again. Yes, deliberation. The committee is moving to deliberation at this time. Again, this is the time for us to discuss this without being interrupted. Dr. Reitz, would you please begin the deliberation?
You know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I will. I'm quite concerned with the lack of documentation. I am quite concerned that while I can appreciate this is hearsay, I also think we have to take very seriously the types of situations that are brought to us. And so I am concerned that it didn't seem to reach the level of a formal incident report, even an internal one. I also, I'm concerned that I get a sense that there is sort of a, when these things happen within this agency, we just tell someone else and let them deal with it. And so I am concerned, again, while I see this document that shows here's what you do, it doesn't seem to be something that's happening in practice. And so I have real concerns, particularly in this one, given what the complaint was. I can appreciate that it was sort of said by someone to someone to someone, but from what I'm seeing and the fact that there's not a full incident report, that we didn't even follow up with the original person who made the statement and complaint, if you will, it's just lacking for me.
Dr. Davey?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I guess, you know, the same discussion, right? Like, things get brought up all the time. It's not just a game of telephone. It's all right, well, here's what we've heard. Like, what are we going to do about it? And who, you know, who's going to be held accountable to close the loop on it? And, you know, the closing of the loop could be, hey, we went and did some internal investigation, or we reached out to the parents after the fact. That's documented and loop closed, right? It's a nice, tidy little package. And that just seems to not be the operational standard going on here. Again, it's around documentation issues. And my general... Well, I'll save that comment for later, but it just is not happening in a way where not only are they putting, you know, the individual clients at risk, but their employees at risk as well around this, as you can see from our discussions here. And it's got a ripple effect. And it's just not good practice, you know. And if there's one, are there 10 of these? You know, what does a serious incident look like? Just still have some significant concerns around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might also just add, you know, I find even the fact that we're getting documentation about a write-up, is interesting to me. Like, we have that documentation and yet none can be provided about follow-up around the actual incident. So I have some real concerns.
I didn't comment on that, but the write-up around gossiping and was interesting to see included in there, right? If that's the close of the loop, is like, this was all not true and unfounded, and now we're going to discipline someone for spreading this, then that should be included in some sort of formal documentation as to why the decision for that is there. But, you know, we just kind of get the disciplinary action included, and that's it. I mean, at some point, it's like, you know, you sit here and you look at the cases individually, you look at them as a whole, and it's the same story, you know, same storyline every single time. And, you know, at what point, you know, individually, you sit there and you think, you know, probably doesn't rise to a statute violation, but it sure does not feel good. And then you get three, four of these and it starts to really not feel good.
Dr. Rates, would you like to propose a motion for this or?
Actually, I think I'd like to motion to go to executive session for legal advice.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. No, we're still in deliberation. Ms. Smith, as I stated before, go ahead and feel free to make your comment.
Yes. The one thing I did want to note is even though I do not personally recall whether or not we reached out to the mother of YR, Paige and Dylan were also those, like some of those people that we contacted just to look for that. So they may recall any extra following ups that we did with that parent.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Dr. Rates.
Yes, thank you. So for me, I think I'm at a point where I would like to look at creating a motion for this case. I appreciate that, you know, Ms. Diamond, you gave us the documentation that we asked for. I also can appreciate that you are in a position where you have policies and procedures that you are trying to follow in terms of reporting to the next person and sort of taking direction from the leaders of your company. That said, you know, we each have a license that we hold as an individual, and so we need to make sure that we are adhering to our ethical standards and ensuring that we are following up and documenting as is directed to us by our practice. So for me, I think I would like to consider a motion that would look at sort of a letter of concern with some non-disciplinary, that is non-disciplinary, really looking at some continuing ed that we can request related to topics of reporting, ethics, documentation, but interested in what my fellow committee members think.
Dr. Rates, I agree. Excuse me. I agree. I think that it would be appropriate for this situation to do that, but also at the same time as a non-disciplinary letter of concern, I think is the level that I would be comfortable with too. So.
I agree. I think that that is the right course here in terms of just some continuing education. I think Ms. Diamond can benefit from some of that and can take those lessons and embed them in her career as she moves forward.
So this is a letter of concern as well as a recommendation for a non-disciplinary CE relating to ethics, reporting, documentation. How many hours are you recommending that the board seek and in what period of time and whether it could be used for the renewal of her certification?
I think typically we would say not for towards the renewal. So this would be in addition to for the continuing ed. And I don't know if my fellow committee members have any thoughts on the number of CEUs, but I'm kind of leaning towards like six. So a couple in each of the areas that we discussed.
I would say time frame of, you know, 60 days, you know, in terms of number of hours, I think six credit hours, six CEUs around various aspects of ethics, mandatory reporting would be advisable. Plenty of CEUs out there around that, and agree not to be, this is in addition to what would be required for her continuing education and license renewal.
All right. So, Dr. Ritz, do you want to frame that in a motion or?
So the recommendation to the board would be, if you don't mind, issuing a letter of concern and a non-disciplinary continuing education order relating to reporting ethics documentation, 6 hours to be completed within 60 days and may not be used for the renewal of her certification.
Okay. And Dr.
Ray, my motion.
Motion?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Further discussion?
You know, again, I just want to thank Ms. Diamond, Ms. Smith for being here. I know that this is not easy. And, you know, I want to reiterate, we are looking at that non-disciplinary because I do think some continuing education in this space and really just support for you. If you find yourself in a situation where I hope you don't, something like this happens again, you feel really confident and that you also really understand that it is your license and yours alone.
All right. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Diamond, for being here, as Dr. Wright stated. Okay, next item is complaint number 23-21 regarding Abigail Barnes. Let's see. Oh, excuse me, I'm in the wrong spot here. At the March 30th meeting, the committee voted to recommend to the board that this complaint against Ms. Barnes be dismissed. That recommendation has not yet been forwarded to the board. The committee reserves the right to consider its recommendation based on the information recently received for the related matters reviewed today. Dr. Rates, in state earlier, do you have any further discussion regarding this?
I do not.
Okay. And again, the complaint EF is not present. Ms. Barnes, I noted you're here. So would you unmute and provide your name for the record? And this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. Oh, I believe you're muted, Ms. Barnes. You're still muted.
Hello.
Oh, there you go. We can hear you. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Abigail Barnes. Like you mentioned, this complaint was addressed in a previous meeting, and the complaint was regarding supervision that I had done with cases that were currently still Dylan Huff's. I was a BCBA. I was not an LBA yet, so I was not billing. I had been practicing writing soap notes per Dylan's request and emailing them to him. And the concern was that the complaint said that he had been billing for those soap notes. As I had stated before, and in my paperwork that I submitted, from my knowledge, that was not being done. I think that's all I have to say.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Do any members have any questions for Ms. Barnes?
I don't believe I have any additional questions at this time.
All right, thank you. Dr. Davey?
No additional questions at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. All right, so the committee will now begin deliberation. This is a time for us to deliberate among ourselves without interruptions. Dr. Yates, would you please begin the deliberation?
Sure. So for me, in reviewing the billing records that we've received, it still appears that there's not a situation where there was billing that happened by Dylan Huff when Ms. Barnes was was present or in her place. I didn't see anything like that. In fact, we noted that for the month that was reported, we have no billing that was captured by Dylan Huff for that client. So for me, I don't know that anything that we saw or records that we had show anything different than what's already been reported.
Okay. All right. Dr. Davey?
I agree. I concur.
Okay. All right. So I do as well. Dr. Raitz, would you like to make a motion?
I would make a motion that we dismiss 2321 or make a recommendation to the board that 2321 be dismissed.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I have a second.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Motion carries. All right. Thank you, Ms. Barnes, for being here. Appreciate it. I did know Ms. Stark and Ms. Huff are on the call. Were you able to identify those documents that we requested earlier?
We have submitted some of the documents, yes. And Ms. Michelson should have them.
I just received them a few minutes ago in committee members. I received 4 screenshots and I did upload that to your materials folder for her complaint. It's labeled docs submitted during the meeting. I can, if you need help identifying the location, I can let you know.
And we were able to obviously submit the updated incident reporting screens from the EHR software. However, Ms. Huff was not able to locate the paper incident report that goes along with the written narrative that we have provided. So that is something that Ms. Huff can address if you want to do that now, or if you guys want to take some time to look at that and then ask us any questions you have.
Fellow committee members, I think that was one of the major pieces that we were requesting was that incident report that that hasn't been able to be found. Ms. Huff, is there a likelihood that that will be found?
I don't know. In all honesty, we just moved offices and all of the documentation for the clients who are at the closed down office is in boxes right now. I do know that one of the reasons we moved away from paper was just the, you know, therapist not sending it or leaving it on the desk or whatever. So we moved away from paper incident reports for that reason. It's all electronic now. We've updated our system and we've been trying to update everything as far as anything that the board has said or that has been with my practice monitor, which then led to the electronic incident reports, and it led through all these things. We are working as a company to just make sure all of the incident reports are investigated and completed. I accept any, you know, information or CEUs to help continue me doing that. And I really think that the modifications that we have made to make everything more organized will be exactly what you need for any further incident reports.
Ms. Huff, where are those documents in the box located right now?
In box, it's in box, like our adventure share file. All of our paper copies are currently in their paper folders. We did have paper data for a while too as well. So it is just being sorted through and scanned in.
Okay. And where are those located right now?
At our West Valley Clinic. They were just transferred over as we closed down a clinic in Central Phoenix.
Okay.
Behind a locked door.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's where I was heading next.
Yep.
With regard to the screenshots you sent over, looking at the first one that's an incident report for SCHA, could you tell us what happened? How severe is the pain? Name? Where did the incident occur? Do you understand what screenshot I'm looking at? It's a white background.
Yes, that is part of ClickUp, what it automatically generates after an incident report.
So this is the backside after a form is completed. So yes. So there's a form on your intranet or somewhere, ClickUp, somebody, the tech types into it.
Yeah.
And, And these fields are mandatory to be like within your settings. Can't see, obviously, but if they are not, I would just encourage you to make sure that all those fields are mandatory so that when information comes through, it comes through. On the next screenshot is of an incident report investigation that has your logo at the top. It's kind of like on my screen, it's black with white writing, but it looks like a document of some sort. Person injured, client code, date and time of injury, 5/29, 2 p.m., reported by Aaron. What is that document I'm looking at? Is that the output?
That is the example of an investigation report that we have made. So when they do that, they then have to upload that to ClickUp, and then it's marked as completed. So when it automatically goes, the one you're seeing for CHA was literally like 10 minutes ago. So there's nothing in there yet. But and part of it is there's a picture at the bottom that I took off. So they have to, they're required to submit a picture as well. And then the supervisor gets a code that they go in, and that one just happened. So nobody's done it yet. But they have to fill out this paperwork after they've watched the cameras and incident reports. Then they fill out the actions that were taken and they submit it back up. And then as ClickUp, they mark it as complete. And then I review it as the owner. I go through and review all of the investigative reports per week, unless it's urgent.
And then the last one is a list that shows open incident reports, 43 tasks. So I'm assuming there are 43 incident reports that you've reviewed since instituting the ClickUp board, or are those the ones that are still open and you've closed other tasks? What am I looking for in that list view?
Those ones are just the ones that have happened for this week. I review them after this meeting. Nothing has been urgent, and they all are instructed to let me know. And every text message that's sent out to parents or anything about incident reports is sent to me. We obviously tell parents way before then, as soon as the incident is done, if like a kid hit his head or like bonked his head or something, we send an immediate picture and stuff like that. But this is specifically the investigative report where the supervisor ensures that everything occurred accurately.
Thank you. So I'll go ahead and just, you know, in terms of deliberation, I mean, I think great that we've got a process in place. Does not help us with the past and kind of making sure that that loop was closed with, you know, her inability to grab that document and see that, you know, that report was actually grabbed and was acted upon. And so I think, you know, feel moderate to good about the process going forward, but still the past is problematic.
Dr. Reitz?
Couldn't have said it better myself. I wholeheartedly agree, Dr. Davey. I feel better seeing what we saw in terms of how you will practice moving forward. I have real concerns that we still can't get that document to us. And so...
Ms. Huff,
able to add something with that?
Yeah, Ms. Huff.
I know that the concern is about the documentation of it not being there. I do want to take full responsibility as in one of the text messages, they like the assistant supervisor, the therapist brought it to the assistant supervisor who brought it to me, and I should have instructed them to make sure they filled out something if it's lost or if it's misplaced or they didn't fill it out because they thought just telling us was the appropriate matter. It's definitely something that I will address going forward to make sure that after anything, I won't just assume an incident report is filled out. I will make sure that I say to do it.
Thank you. Dr. Davey?
In terms of timeline, Ms. Huff, I know you worked with a practice monitor that helped you with your documentation. Did this incident report happen before working with the practice monitor, during or after?
It was, I believe, slightly after, but Jamie and I were still talking a lot as she was very helpful. And so she agreed to help mentor me in any big situations. And this was a big situation that I definitely looked for mentorship on. So I utilized her to help me get through it. Our incident reports were updated throughout the process. And as we've continued to monitor and change it as it's needed, as we need to investigate and we need follow-ups and we need all of this documentation. But I did work with her throughout this specific incident and I did talk to her about it.
Thank you.
For me, I actually have, Ms. Huff, I'm concerned to hear that you are already working with a practice, with someone on your practice, and this was the result of consultation, because what I'm seeing is, quite frankly, poor documentation, poor follow through. And now what I'm hearing you say, and I appreciate you taking accountability, but what I just heard you say is, if it wasn't filled out or if it was lost, which is actually causing me more concern, because shortly, not long ago, you said you had an incident report, one absolutely was done, and it was in a hard file. And now what I hear you saying is, if it wasn't done or it got lost. And so I will be honest, hearing that, in addition to I was already working with somebody and we're witnessing sort of their support, is concerning. But I see Dr. Davies' hands up, so I'm gonna
that was for last one, sorry.
And Dr. Reitz, you know, if I could just reiterate too, you know, I think an overhaul of a system, you know, can take some time. And I think, you know, part of the maybe working with, and I'm not going to speak for Ms. Huff, but maybe working with the practice monitor was trying to figure out how to get some of this stuff more organized. And maybe it took some time to actually implement that. And I think that's why we're seeing the changes that were made here, is because of those potential issues, and why we have, you know, seen Ms. Huff update these systems and, you know, have the new processes that are now before you.
I learned a lot when it came to updating things as they continue. Not saying that everything we did during my practice monitorship was perfect, because we dived through my entire company's policies, procedures, BCBA, supervision, everything. And we came up with a lot of systems. And incident reports were part of them, but also I think one of the lacking parts of it was the follow-up that we did not talk about in my practice management when it came to incident reports, but I think I generalized my skill with Jamie enough to realize that when I am starting to see things, or I note things, or even something comes to my mind, to implement those policies as quickly as I can. So although we changed a lot of things, I am still looking at everything and making sure that we're adding more as we continue.
Are you still engaged with Jamie now?
I will talk to her. She's become a really big support. She's probably one of the only ethical supervisors I've ever worked under.
So I'm going to, in general, Ms. Huff, like, if I look at this from just a very, from the 5,000 foot view, what I see is, you know, as I take, and I'm going to be honest, I take all the cases that, you know, and all of my interactions I've ever had with you and Dylan and ABA Adventure, and put this into context. You had an agency that you started that grew very quickly, you know, to Dylan's point, you were at 100 employees overnight. And your systems were not in place to be able to handle that. I mean, I think that if there's anything I've come to the conclusion of spending time with you and Mr. Huff is that there is a lot of good intention and a lot of discussion around it, but the actual process and operating of the business lagged behind your ability to, you know, it lagged in comparison to your growth. And to be quite honest, like the self-inflicted wounds are because of that. And the practice monitoring, I think, was a great step in terms of Jamie, but I don't know that it was enough to unearth the things that, you know, may have been put in place 3-4 years ago during that growth period. And, you know, over the course of the company, it's gotten large, it's contracted a bit, it's moved, it's gotten large again. My concern is, like, at what point can you take a deep breath in terms of your agency? And now I understand you're going to be the full owner of this agency, and really, you know, unplug from the day-to-day and dive into each of those areas, whether they're compliance, contract and credentialing, supervision. I mean, the list of things that goes on in your company is, you know, substantial. And now that rests upon you. And I, you know, I love the mindset of, you know, wanting to recommend you have to go back with Jamie and hit those areas again, because I don't want to continue to have these conversations, but I feel without a comprehensive approach to you looking at underneath the hood of the business, that the next discussion could be around any of those areas I just mentioned. And, you know, it's like, yeah, we recognize it. And yeah, we're trying to do better, but at some point we've got to hit the reset button 100% and expect that you're on your way. And I think that I'm just, second round of these conversations just making me think that with the time we asked that you and Jamie work together was just not sufficient to get it all done. And, you know, and have a plan to attack it, even if it's a 6-month plan, a year plan, like what is the plan and delivering upon that to us?
I do. I actually do have a very big plan. We've scaled back. We have only 40 BTs now, which is a huge decrease. We have consistent care, a lot less admin staff that are assigning a bunch of different things, taking things by myself and doing them, as well as having BCBAs handle them. We have all new systems in place to identify those. We have meetings. We have, you know, session note meetings that we're going through to go through the session notes and everything. And we are working, like I said, I think that I generalized a lot of my stuff from Jamie to take a step back and do that. Now, as Thrive was going through my divorce and stuff, I have really just picked that up last October, and I have really gotten a lot of things changed. And I officially took over full ownership in March, leaving no room for anything else to be said or done to continue these processes myself, based off of the knowledge and information I have. And there has been a lot of changes since then.
Thank you. Are we in deliberations still? Where are we at, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, just because we came back in to further the discussion. So yes, let's call this deliberation. Any other comments? I know Dr. Davey had several questions and taken care of it, but yeah, any,
you know, my feeling is, and again, happy to put this in the form of motion, but I think it's part of the discussion. Like part of it is like, if we believe the first step in the practice monitor, but had some success, then do we want to continue to try to rehabilitate Ms. Huff as not only a BCBA, but as someone who's in control of an agency, and, you know, put in more practice monitoring to be able to make sure that happens? I mean, that's the question I have right now. I don't know, you know, continuing ed, what's it going to do? A letter of censure, you know, what's it going to do? Like if this is really about wanting to make the steps forward, then it's got to be, I think, a very clear, directed action item punch list with the practice monitor about the things that we know to be deficient from the past. Are they up to speed today? And then what other areas have been identified in self-study by Ms. Huff that she also knows they need to attack, but just hasn't had the time? And then how quickly are those going to get remediated? Because I don't want to be back here 3 months from now talking about, you know, failure to have proper logs on first year BCBAs being supervised to be able to provide supervision, and we didn't do it correctly. Like, I don't want to repeat these things. Like, we continue to hear that we've corrected them. Systems are in place. I've seen that. Like, that's the reason I'm leaning towards this, because I did see that in your supervisory a complaint that came through that you weren't supervising adequately. You put a system in place. The supervision was clearly documented. So I know you have that skill set. And so that is where I'm at this particular point.
I tend to agree. We need good agencies. We need great BCBAs who can serve our community. And we want to do all that we can to get people where they need to be when they can. But I also agree with Dr. Davey. Like, I don't want to be here again, finding that there's these issues that continue. So I do think that considering some additional practice monitoring, something to that degree would be where I'm headed as well.
Yeah, committee members, I agree as well. I think well, Ms. Huff is still collaborating or consulting, whatever word you want to use for that, with the practice monitor. I think that having a direct order for that practice monitor would be appropriate for right now. And then those issues that you listed, Dr. Davey, about, you know, all of the compiling and trying to get policy and procedure in place, I think it'd be, I think it would help with the effectiveness and the efficiency of getting those done. We've heard several issues today regarding the agency, and it'd bring a, yeah, I think it'd be appropriate to have an order for a practice monitor be in place and as a recommendation to the board.
Galvin, how would we work through that recommendation? Obviously, a recommendation to the board, would we have a chance to outline the areas that we would like to see the practice manager, practice management or practice monitor take a look at? Could we do that in collaboration with Ms. Huff and Ms. Stark in terms of like the areas of self-study? Because I mean, I can list off all the operating areas of a business, but you know, there may be things that are still on Ms. Huff's to-do list from her last time with Jamie. Like, this is the time to put them back out there and get them knocked out versus, you know, on a to-do list somewhere.
So you could recommend that the parties engage in a consent agreement that would call for additional monitoring for, you need to specify what period of time, and that it would address the concerns raised by the committee in particular areas, and staff and I and Ms. Stark would negotiate that consent agreement if they are willing to enter into a consent agreement. If they're not, the recommendation may include a referral to formal hearing.
I think that would be my motion.
All right. Do I have a second then? Thank you, Dr.
Second. Okay. I didn't hear a specification about how long.
I think last time we did 6 months. I think this time we need a year. I think that it's going to take some time. And again, my purpose of saying that is that let's turn every stone. Let's work with, you know, if it can be Jamie again, it can be someone who's more on the operations side. It does not matter, but let's get this fixed and launch this thing so we're not back here.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Any further discussion? Oh, Ms. Pakenham.
Really a question, Mr. Chair, if I can, for Ms. Galvin. Can a practice restriction be part of that monitoring as well if the committee feels compelled to put sort of any, you know, guardrails in place or, limitations on where, how, under what circumstances to practice? Oh, you're muted.
They can make that recommendation. We would need to hear now in what way you would want her to restrict the practice, her practice.
Many members, is any thoughts on that?
I'm not sure how I would restrict it at this point. I hadn't really thought that through, just because of in her position as someone who's signing off on policies, procedures, and following up on the activities of other employees. I'm not sure exactly, you know, if I was going to restrict it from working with a certain population of children or clients, but I don't think if I restrict it, then I'm not sure how the practice monitor is going to be able to see the thing. So I'm having trouble connecting those dots, Ms. Pakenham. If you have something in mind that I'm not thinking of, please share.
And Ms. Galvin, if you have any examples as well, quite frankly, I'm drawing upon some past experience I have where a different board acknowledging how much authority and latitude, you know, a practice owner had, that is really enabling some of the conduct that's precipitating the concerns. So There have been other boards that, you know, sort of limited, you know, what their authority was over, you know, certain aspects of practice management.
I'm not aware with respect to this board where practice restrictions have come into play, except maybe there were certain populations that we've asked a licensee not to, you know, engage in. But when you have just kind of a general overall, I'll use the word maybe failure, to oversee a business and the supervision that it takes to ensure all of those under you are practicing competently and you're carrying out your policies and procedures, I'm not aware of a restriction that might assist in doing that.
Well, and I guess just to maybe be more direct, handing the management off to, requiring the licensee to hand the management off to, you know, someone else, and, you know, the individual is really responsible for their own practice management and not so much the agency. So those, that's what I've observed with other boards. Mm-hmm. And this may or may not be practical or necessary in this matter. I'm just offering that perspective.
Yeah, I appreciate the perspective. I don't know that in this case I'm feeling that particular direction, but I do appreciate the thought around that as a mechanism. I don't know how other committee members feel.
With the issues that we've addressed or heard today, there's also been evidence of movement towards rectifying some of those situations. And to your point, Dr. Davey, if there were restrictions, it might inhibit the progression without being able to practice those things or needing to go through somebody else to do those. And then the major question is there a concern for the public at this time where the practices are? And I think that's a pretty big question right there, but I would say, you know, I think it appears that things are moving in a direction, and so I'd be comfortable not doing a restriction, I guess, because of some of the things I've seen or not seen but discussed today. So
yeah, I think I agree with you, Dr. Stenhoff. I think we've seen that there's the ability to make system change, that you're identifying the value in that. And I think with more support, and I would agree, I think Dr. Davey, you said this, more focus, mm-hmm. and really identifying like this as the focus for you right now, so you can take care of those spaces that need.
And I know this, you're in this regard, Ms. Huff is at the mercy of the expediency at which she can, retain a practice monitor, but I would want this done as soon as possible, and I know that's hard to quantify, but you know, now I don't know how else to say it, but I would want to see that done sooner, you know, very, very soon. And I don't even want to use the term sooner than later, I mean like now, you know, it, to the extent that it can be done now, if that makes sense.
Can I ask for a point of clarification? Would she be permitted to use the same practice monitor that she's previously used, or would it have to be a different individual?
I would contend if the current practice, or not the current, but to retain the previous, or in the one that there's still for consultation that's being used, I would contend that if that practice monitor is with, if these areas are within that practice monitor's scope of practice, and there's some level of expertise in order to design and suggest and mentor Ms. Huff, say it that way, and other committee members, if you have further.
I would say there'd be benefit to using if the current practice manager feels comfortable taking on these tasks and has it within their scope of practice and expertise, then there's benefit to bringing someone in who's not going to have to be brought up to speed, that things can start to happen much quicker.
Okay, so I don't believe anything's changed as far as the motion. Is that, am I correct with that? And then just for me, do we have a second? Okay. Dr. Ray raised your hand and Mal second, I believe. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Dr. Davey?
Aye.
Oh, thank you. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay, so we have one more agenda item, and I would need board staff perhaps to help with this. I know a couple of us have, one has suggested moving a deadline out. I've already done that, or a hard end. Is there any recommendations or suggestions based on this? Because I do have a hard 12:30, unfortunately. So is there any idea on this one? And I might be able to push it out 10 minutes, but really that's it. And that's obviously not near enough time. My overview is going to take at least 5 minutes. So, but.
Mr. Chair, just sort of see if my thoughts can keep up. We have a meeting scheduled for June 30th. That's your next regularly scheduled meeting. We could try to put another meeting on the calendar, but that would need to, involve coordination among, all the parties to make that happen. There's a July meeting, of course, a regularly scheduled meeting. So I think that, we're all acknowledging that, this needs to be on a future meeting agenda. I think the question is whether we make an attempt for a special meeting or we just fall back to meetings that are already on the calendar. Ms. Michelson, do you see a different solution that I'm not thinking of?
I had the similar thought process as you, Ms. Pakanan. So the committee's next regularly scheduled meeting is Friday, June 30th, if I believe. Yes, that's the correct date. And we could schedule it for that meeting. However, I do not know if all of the parties are available. That would be Mr. Huff, Ms. Quinn, and Ms. Bellacost. So if I could get some feedback from them, that might be helpful about their availability.
Ms. Balakas, I see your hand up.
Hi, thank you for the acknowledgement. I would just earnestly say that, this is the second meeting that I've made myself available for the entirety of the meeting. And okay. I'm really hoping to have this resolved. I've set aside my time and I'm hoping to communicate my information to the board as expeditiously as possible for the sake of the protection of the public. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Members of the board, if I may, I've checked my schedule and also the other attorney for Mr. Huff, Robin Burgess, and we are both not available on June 30th.
Dr. Davey and Dr. Rates, is there, is there a chance that you could stay on for a little bit longer and I can just, try to stay on as long as possible?
Well, if you depart, we lose quorum.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. I would, I'll, I'll take care of that.
I don't know that I don't know that I can pass the certain time.
Okay, and Dr. Reitz, I know you moved this out as well.
Yeah, I've got. I've already missed. Yeah, I cannot continue. Like there was a hard stop. We had
11:30.
2 hours, you know, blocked for this. 3 hours blocked for this. Now, like I need to attend to some matters, and I appreciate the party's positions, but at the same time, I need to also maintain my responsibilities to my families that I work with.
Right. Right. Likewise.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if the solution then would be perhaps a shorter special meeting. The subsequent CBA meeting, July 28th, I can tell you there's already other matters scheduled, so I'm not confident that we would be able to add these case reviews on the agenda and have sufficient time. So okay. I just want to let the committee know that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask board staff, is there some guidance? I mean, you know, we looked at the 30th and the parties here are not able to attend on the 30th.
I think you just, at this point, we have to leave it up to staff, unfortunately, to coordinate everyone.
Okay, thank you.
We'll attempt to coordinate a date that works for all committee members and parties involved.
Okay. All right. Okay. So given that, I'm going to say that that we're going to, table agenda item number 5. Is there anything that we need to address for agenda item number 6, new agenda items for future meetings? Okay, hearing none, then I'm going to move on to agenda item number 7. That's adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, further discussion? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries or adjourn. All right, and public, thank you for being here, and board staff and Ms. Galvin.